Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking about the fiscal mirage and, well, the Robin Hood tax. There were candlelight vigils all across the country. People saying, hey, before you start cutting granny off at the knees, let's go after the people who caused the financial crisis and put us in the mess that we're in. You know, those people on Wall Street. Yeah, the big banksters. Let's go ahead, just a little bit, not a lot. Small, rational, reasonable tax, like we tax everything else. Like if I buy a pack of Chiclets or a pack of gum, you're taxing it. Also, we're going to talk about people across the country in the streets. Like I said, the candlelight vigils. Also, you know, some out in Pittsburgh saying, hey, you know, don't cut Medicare and Medicaid. Some in Philadelphia, you know, all across the country, people are saying, you know what? Never mind the fiscal cliff. Let's fix our real problem. And for me, it's about the jobs. You know, the real crisis, the one that nobody's really focused on, because, oh, they've got us looking over here, the fiscal cliff. Over here, the fiscal cliff. Over here, the cliff. When it's our real crisis is the jobs. So what we should be talking about, instead of the fiscal mirage, we should really be pursuing full employment policies. I'm going to talk about that. Also, education of the future, education a la carte. Pick and choose from the buffet of educational options, all for profit, of course. Going to talk about that. And also President Obama in Detroit today, big speech. Going to talk about that. Also your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So I take a couple of days off to go work on a project, you know, try and do some fundraising around a project we want to do next summer, and all hell breaks loose. You know, if you remember what I said about why we went to Wisconsin back in February of 2011, if you remember the reason that we went to Wisconsin, purely to focus on places like that, you know, places like Maine, if you know why we focus on that stuff, Maine or Indiana or Ohio or any of those places, if you wonder, well, why are we talking about that? The reason we follow those issues all across the country is because we're seeing this national strategy to screw workers. That's it. Bottom line. It's the no rights at work agenda in action nationwide. And as I said, with Wisconsin, as soon as it hits there, it's going other places. It will be here. The no rights at work agenda will eventually slither right here to Pennsylvania. This no rights at work agenda has no rights and certainly no work. So I look at what happened in Michigan while we were away, working on this project, I just, bang, it's done. All of a sudden, the no rights work, at work state. And again, you know, the people who told us that they believed in accountability, they believed in open, transparent government, they believed in the rule of law, of process, you know, these people, what have they done? In a very authoritarian type push, they've gone after the right of workers to have that voice. And Rick Snyder, the governor there from Florida or from Michigan, not too long ago, said that, well, you know, I'm not really all that interested in going after it. I was thinking of something along the lines of, you know, it's a divisive issue. And, you know, I just don't see it in our future in 2013. Well, here's him saying it.
Right to work is an issue that's a very divisive issue. People feel very strongly about it.
People feel very strongly about it. And, you know, hey, it's not something.
Right to work is an issue that may have its time and place, but I don't believe it's appropriate in Michigan during 2012.
But here, last minute, they decide. And this is what gets me. You know, these are the open transparency people. 11 o'clock in the morning. They decide, well, you know what? We're going to pass it. We're going to roll out our intentions. We're going to go through. They had their little press conference. By noon, an hour later, they had the use of vehicle bills and put the new legislation to the full House and Senate. They were introduced into the full chamber previously. Language, a lot of changes going on there with the new bills. But, hey, you know what? Hey, let's get it done. So by 4:45, the House had passed a bill. By 7:45, after the Democrats had walked out and there was a whole bunch of wrangling going on, by 7:45, the Senate had passed the bill. And now they've got to wait 5 days so that they can pass it and have it on the governor's desk. Because that's a matter of constitution. And, oh, by the way, they learned from Wisconsin. They've learned from Ohio, where they have the ability to overturn things by matter of the election box, of the ballot box. So what they did is they tied an appropriations portion to the bill so that by matter of their constitution, it's not possible to repeal it through referendum. Isn't that brilliant? And these are the people who believe in the rights of the people, or so they say. And they believe in the rights of the ballot box, or so they say. At the end of the day, tomorrow, it's probably going to pass. Might be delayed a day or two, but it's going to pass. And the voters are going to get screwed. And they did all this in one day. And there's part of me that goes, you know, well, you know, the reality is Democrats, when they have that kind of steamroller power, they're not that efficient. I guess you could look at this and go, well, the Republicans are very efficient. They know how to run the steamroller. They got a lot of money. There's a big push, and later on in the program, we're going to talk about the money that's pushing this out onto the forefront. Because, look, their governor, Snyder, said it's not on the agenda. It's not something I see in 2012. It's divisive. We want to be moderate. We want to get things done. Nothing. Nothing at all, man. The big money said you'll do it, and you'll do it now. And I go back to what my grandfather always said. If a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. So when a billionaire is saying, hey, I'm going to invest tons of money, millions and millions of dollars to push this mythical, magical little, this potion, this wonderful idea, oh, the right to work, but not the right to be free from hunger or free from poverty or free, none of those rights. No. You have the right to work for poverty wages in this world where we're pushing the no rights at work agenda. And they understand the more they invest in it, the more they can push this down the working people's throats, the more they're going to reap, the more benefits they're going to reap. And I look at this and I go, you know, at some point, when are we, the people, going to rise up and say no more? The president gave a speech today in Detroit where he, you know, talking about the no rights at work agenda. And he said, you know, look, you know, these so-called laws, these so-called right to work laws, they don't have to do with economics, nothing to do with it at all. They have everything to do with politics. And that's where he's right. This is all political, Machiavellian political backstabbing by the Republicans. What Obama said is what they're really talking about is giving you the right to work for less money. He said, we don't want a race to the bottom. We want a race to the top. He says, look, America's not going to compete based on low skill, low wage, no workers' rights. We're not going to do that. That's not our competitive advantage. He said, there's always going to be some in other countries that can treat its workers even worse, right? What's going to make us succeed is we've got the best workers, well-trained, reliable, productive, low turnover, healthy. That's what makes us strong. He said it's what allows our workers to then buy the products that we make because they got enough money in their pockets. And that's simple economics. And you look at Michigan, I mean, hit by the recession, just decimated by the recession. As a matter of the state's income, the so-called middle class saw its percentage of income going to the middle class drop from almost 54% in 1979 down to 47% in 2012. So where is the rest of that wealth going? To the people who are pushing these kind of policies. To the people who want to make sure that, well, you know what? You can't, you're going to make less. And I look at the Economic Policy Institute, who did a study on this and found that this no rights at work agenda cost working people, all working people, not just union people, but non-union. It doesn't matter. It's going to cost about $1,500 a year in wages. And in those states that have this no rights at work agenda, of which Michigan may soon be a member, it's going to be harder to find health care. It's going to be harder to get pensions. And that's exactly what the wealth class wants. So I look at this, and I go back to the reality of, look, what happened to open public hearings? What happened to debate? What happened to hearing both sides, having hearings, getting the input from the public? This was laid out at 11 o'clock in the morning, and by 8 o'clock at night, it had passed, and it was on its way to becoming law. No input from the citizens. In fact, they actually locked down the Capitol. Democrats had to go to court and sue to open the doors. And I go back to my Republican friends, is this how you want government to run? Because remember, at some point, the Democrats will get a spine. And in Michigan, I'll bet you the next election, we see a huge swing. I mean, this last election saw a bunch of T-twits get tossed out. I'll bet you next time we see more. Even if you're not someone who knows a thing about unions, and look, this bill is not about giving workers rights, really. If anything, it's about taking them all away and then taking away the vehicle for you to gain some right. It's about a shift of power and a massive shift in power. It's about a massive overreach of power. But understand, when the Democrats grab control, Republicans, don't be surprised if it comes back and bites you. You know, people say, well, Obama ran through with Obamacare. A year that took. I would agree, had Obama at 11 o'clock in the morning on any given Thursday come out and said, you know what, we're going to pass Obamacare. And by 8 o'clock that night, it was on its way to being law. I would agree with you. Obamacare took a year. This, well, what, 9 hours? At best? They pepper sprayed people outside the building. They arrested folks. They locked down the Capitol. All so they could have a little bit more for those at the very top. And look, at the end of this, whether you know anything about labor unions or not, anytime we, the people, anytime we lose the right, because I hear people say, well, Rick, you know, you should have the right. You know, to go to work, you should. You shouldn't have to join. Even though that's already the law, it's been the law for generations. If there's a union in the place where you work, you don't have to join. But even their governor didn't know that. So they pushed through their agenda. They pushed through this no rights at work agenda without even knowing what it's really about. And what it's really about, bottom line, is consolidation of power into the hands of the very few. Consolidation of power into the very, very wealthy's hands. And creating an even larger desperation class. Making it even more difficult for average, everyday Joe Sixpacks and Jelly Bucket people to make it into that middle class. Increasing that gulf between the very wealthy and the rest of us. And it's about absolute, total, complete control. and you doing what you're told and never asking why. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Michigan is on the path to becoming a right-to-work state after Republicans in the legislature fast-tracked bills on Thursday. Due to a rule that prevents both chambers from voting on the same legislation for 5 days, the soonest the measures can be sent to Governor Rick Snyder's desk is Tuesday. In November, Michiganders rejected a law passed in 2011 that gave emergency financial managers broad powers, which included the power to dissolve union contracts. In an effort to stop the right-to-work legislation from being repealed in a same way, Republicans inserted financial measures into the legislation. Deborah Nault is a registered nurse in Michigan, and she's seen firsthand the difference between having union representation and not.
Well, you know, having worked in the same institution in my career, I worked there in a non-union organization and then when it became unionized. And there's a huge difference. I mean, we have a voice in the workplace. We have a voice in our staffing. You know, when something isn't right, you know, we can speak up without fear of being reprimanded. And it was not like that before. And so, with right to work, you know, it's going to weaken unions. And, you know, we're not going to have that voice in the workplace, you know, that we enjoy now. And, you know, healthcare, you know, has become very, very complicated, you know, having been in this for over 30 years. It's just not as easy to be a nurse anymore. You know, in the olden days, you know, you didn't need as many nurses because the patients weren't as sick. There wasn't so much technology. There wasn't so much charting. I mean, now all of us are going, you know, to computer documentation and EMRs. I mean, there's just so much that's involved in nursing now that, you know, we just can't do it the way that we did 15, 20 years ago. And so not to have a voice in what's happening in the workplace, I think is really going to hurt patient safety. You know, it can be costly, you know, but you have to spend the money up front so that you don't, you know, run into problems in the long run. And I don't think that they always see it that way.
Major rallies are expected in downtown Lansing Monday and Tuesday in a last-ditch effort to convince the governor to not sign the bill into law. Snyder had previously said that right to work wasn't on his agenda, but in recent days said he felt the law is actually necessary due to voters voting out his emergency financial manager law.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We need to support people, you know, who have a history of and know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck, not the back of a paycheck.
If you're here to represent our mission, you are right. They say the USA is drowning in
welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So the end of the month, we're looking at, some 2.1 million people who have been unemployed for longer than 6 months. They're going to lose their unemployment benefits if something doesn't happen with the fiscal mirage, if they don't solve these problems. And they say over the next 3 months, going to lose a million more people, a million more folks who are on long-term unemployment. It's done, gone. That's if Congress doesn't act. You want to talk about uncertainty? These are the people who are really facing the fiscal cliff. Because if Congress doesn't do anything, they're cut off. It's it. They're done. They're the ones facing the true cliff. And you look at the reality, about 5 million people have been out of work for more than 6 months. according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 40% of all unemployed workers. The CBO had a study last month that I talked about, said that, look, if we extend the long-term unemployment benefits, make sure we keep money in the economy, make sure these some 5 million people don't lose their homes and their ability to support their families, that would create another 300,000 jobs to our economy. But no, we've got the right wing in this country saying, no, they're lazy. They're just too lazy to work. Nonsense. Absolute, complete nonsense. Which is why I'm happy to see people in the streets. And I got to tell you, these 5 million folks who could lose their unemployment benefits, they should be in the streets. That's the sad thing about it. We don't see those lines of folks anymore, and I wish we did. But I've got one unemployed worker here on the line, Mary Downing. She's been unemployed for some time. Her brother relies on Medicaid services, so this is kind of a double thing. If the cliff goes the way that the Republicans seem to want it, this is a family who could be truly, truly irreparably harmed. Mary, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, pleasure to speak to you.
You know, I look at this, you know, this, all of the people out in the street today. I know there were candlelight vigils across the country. I know in Bristol, Pennsylvania, there was one there at the, around the holiday tree saying, hey, extend the tax cuts for the middle class.
That's right. I was there. I was one of the attendees at that rally as well.
And what kind of a turnout did you get?
We had a pretty decent turnout. You know, we always would like to have more people. But it wasn't bad. We had some good speakers. As well, we were also at Mike Fitzpatrick's office in Langhorne at 4 o'clock and then went up to Bristol for our 5:30 candlelight vigil.
Has he ever talked to you guys? I mean, I know there's been a lot of action in his district, a lot of activists saying, hey, you know, we want you to vote the right way. Has he ever talked to you guys?
Never. Exactly, though. A couple weeks ago, a group caught him in the hallway. And I don't know where he was trying to sneak off to, but they caught him coming down the back hallway. And he just kind of basically said, yeah, sure, I'll set up town hall meeting, this, that, and the other. I'll be happy to meet with you, and just kind of brushed everybody off. But then I was there about 2 weeks ago and delivered letters from people also to him. And every time we go, he's never there. So at best, if we're lucky, we get his chief deputy, who we had once. And then last time I was there, all I had was the receptionist out front. But I did it anyway.
You have to.
I did it anyway because this is important. This is very important.
Now, someone told me that he sends someone out to the events, but he never shows up.
He never shows up. Nope, he never shows up. He sends, I guess, some of his people out to see what's going on.
Yeah, with a video camera, as I understand.
Right, with a video camera, exactly. Exactly.
And I would say that's kind of to intimidate you probably more than anything. I would think that's an intimidation tactic.
Well, it didn't intimidate any of us.
Good.
At neither rally, outside his office in Langhorne or at the in Bristol Borough this evening.
So what are we telling people? I mean, you know, I keep telling folks, you know, the simple lift here, the easy solution here is extend what we know everybody wants. Both Democrats and Republicans claim that they want the Bush tax cuts to go for the 98% of the people in this country who need them, the folks who spend almost every penny that they make to keep the economy moving. That seems like a simple lift for me.
And it's one that makes the most sense because the 98% of the people are the ones that need this tax break to stay the way it is because they're the ones that are barely surviving right now. It gives them money to buy food with, pay for a mortgage, pay rent, buy glasses with. And I had the instance last night where my frame broke for my glasses. So since I can't afford to get new lenses right now, my prescription is like 2 years old, I got new frames. It ended up costing me $75 to get frames to fit my lenses. So we're the people that need it because we're putting the money back in the economy.
Yeah, and
if we have it. If we go off the cliff, so-called cliff, as you said earlier, unemployment's going to end, emergency unemployment, so forth and so on, and more drastic cuts. I don't want President Obama to agree to anything with them. And then they're going to hold us captive again by negotiating the debt ceiling.
Yep, that's coming. And they've already told us it's coming. They've said, you know, we're going to give in a little bit here and we're going to get as much as we can. And then we'll really get in the next rack. And it's just all this political game instead of doing what's in the best interest of folks like you. I mean, you, how long have you been unemployed?
You're let me see, a little over a year and a half now.
Wow. You want to talk about a real crisis? The real cliff? It's the jobs cliff. It's the jobs crisis. None of this stuff that they're doing is going to create jobs. All of this uncertainty, all of this stuff that they're doing creates the uncertainty that Republicans claim kills jobs. So why in the hell are they doing it?
And I couldn't agree with you more with that. I mean, look at everything what Congress has done to the American people in the last 2 years. Didn't want to pass the President Jobs Act. They didn't want to pass the Jobs for Veterans Act. They didn't want to pass the bill for against women, violence against women.
Still don't.
You're
right. They still don't. I mean, and none of that stuff is going to get passed because these are folks who haven't figured out how to exact their pound of flesh.
Exactly. And I look for jobs every day, and the most menial jobs anymore, you have to apply for online.
Yep.
And I'm still paying school loans. I can't pay my school loans off when they're $9, $8 an hour.
And those are loans that never can be discharged either. Congratulations.
And they're loans that will never be discharged. They will follow me to my grave, Rick, because I do the best I can with paying them. And I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
And to top it off, I have a Down syndrome brother who him and the other gentleman who is with them in their house, they relied on Medicaid to survive.
That's what I was going to ask you about because, you know, you look at the other part of this is the cuts to the social services, the cuts to programs like Medicaid that help folks like your brother. What would a massive cut to Medicaid mean to him?
Well, they already have cuts right now. Governor Corbett of Pennsylvania implemented cuts to developmentally disabled and the physically handicapped. So I could already see differences in where he's always lived at home. He always lived with me after my parents passed. And then I couldn't afford to take care of him anymore because I couldn't keep up without a job. Right. I couldn't keep up financially.
So you know what the perfect solution to that is, Mary? We pay you to take care of your brother.
Well, that would be the best way rather than paying places to do it. And they wouldn't even have to pay to us as much. It's not a pay. It's just a little bit. It's for him.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you're still taking care of him. I am a firm believer we should be helping folks like your brother, helping people. You know, you want to talk about creating jobs? Right there is a perfect solution to a very fixable problem.
True, and they do this in New Mexico, I found out. They do pay. They contribute to the support of that dependent individual. So if I was living out there and my brother was living with me, they would pay for him to still stay at home, for you to take care of him, and for you to support him in all the ways that he needs, whether it be medical, whether it be food, or whether it be whatever.
You come back.
That doesn't mean you still don't work. I mean, you could still work. They go to a day program if that was an opportunity for them to do.
Yeah, but you talk about family values. To me, it sounds like a perfect family value to help their brother stay with someone that's family, that can help to take care of them and in their own home and not in an institution and lead some type of a normal existence.
Exactly. And believe me, Rick, if I could do it now, I would.
Yeah, but I mean, this is where smart policy and smart investment by our government, not this slash and burn, cut, gut, and punish, and let's see who we can screw at the bottom so we can enrich the top mentality. This stuff's got to stop.
Well, see, that's the problem, because that's what I feel like what's happening between the Democrats and Republicans. Republicans, they, in my opinion, they don't give a darn about the middle class or if there's ever a middle class going to be left there for all this, because we're all sinking to the bottom very rapidly. What ends up happening is it just seems like, you know, everything is money these days. Now, with this thing in Michigan, the Koch brothers poured a ton of money into that.
Yeah, and the DeVos family.
Exactly, to get this going on. What is that doing to them? What is that doing to our country?
Well,
all it is suppressing people so they can have more money for themselves or whatever. And the right to work for less, that's exactly what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how it's always been. The pendulum of power swings back and forth, and right now it's swinging way to the extreme because, well, they've got the money to keep pushing it.
And that's the problem. But, you know, I'm committed. I am committed. I am, I do what I can to support the issues, to support the president's agenda, certain things that he is fighting for the American people, the middle class, the poor, so forth and so on. What's going on is getting absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean, I have resorted going to my own church once a month to get canned goods, cereals, and so forth and so on. I never did that in all my years. And here I am. And then I don't want the Medicare age raised. I mean, I'll be 62 in June.
Wow, and you're still...
What, do I have to work till I'm 67?
Did they
raise it?
Yeah, it's outrageous. And for me, you know, you look at the first club out of the Republicans' bag. Oh, let's screw the poor. Let's screw the working people.
Well, I emailed the president tonight myself and told him that he better make sure that he stays firm in supporting the middle class. No negotiations on the Medicare age.
I'm right there
no
with
negotiations
you.
On this fiscal cliff that they keep talking about. And let the top 2% pay more taxes.
I'm right there
I
with
mean,
you.
If I was in the top 2%, Rick, I'd be more than willing to pay more taxes to help the country and to get the economy going and to give people jobs and so forth and so on. I mean, how many elevators in your house do you need for your cars? And so forth.
You got to have a subterranean. In order to be in the wealth class, you have to have a subterranean parking garage. I'm sorry. You just have to. It's an absolute must.
I mean, exactly. And where was George Bush when Romney, what was it? I think he was there during the RNC. He was down at Cayman Islands looking into investment.
He was actually down there giving a speech on how to avoid paying taxes.
Right. How to avoid paying taxes when he put our country in debt with two wars.
Which is why I'm happy to see folks like you out in the street, and I think we need to be doing more of it. I'd love to see more people out in the streets. To me, that's where this has to be settled. This is where this all has to go. We've got to activate, engage, and educate folks. And during that process, we got to outrage them.
And believe me, Rick, I do this every day. I mean, I could be anywhere, and I start talking to people. If I hear one little hint from them, if I'm standing even in line and they say something, and I said, well, you know why this happened, don't you?
Obama.
Or you know why this is like this.
It's Obamacare.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm for Obamacare.
It's Obama phone. I mean, this is what because I do the same thing that you do. You know, I have these conversations with people, and they throw out these platitudes where they really don't know what they're talking about, but it's what they've been told repetitively. It's what they hear, which is
and
why...
Exactly. They have no clue. I got to tell you something. I get emails from this person I know, and it's like a group email. She gets them from somebody else, and then she forwards them and all this other nonsense. I get an email from them about, because they see it online, so everything is true. Nobody looks in the thing. Nobody investigates anything about what happens in New York every Friday with the Muslims, that they take over the streets and they go out there and pray. And New York allows it. I cracked up. And because that, it's a New Year thing with them. It's like when we have our New Year's Day parade, it's a 1 year celebration or whatever. But I emailed them back and I said, this is the problem today. Nobody looks into the facts. Everybody just believes what they hear or what they read or pass along on the internet. The only problem with America today are people like you that continually do this nonsense and don't find out the facts and don't stand up for what's right. Don't stand up for the people that can't stand up for themselves. Like my brother and many other people and so forth.
Which is why I got to tell you, Mary, I'm glad to see that you were out in the streets today. You went to two, what was the other event you went to today?
Well, we went to, an SEIU event. They were heading it. And it was at Mike Fitzpatrick, one of his constituents, here in Bucks County, in Langhorne, at Summit Square Shopping Center.
Okay.
We were there. We had speakers. We had the press. And we had speakers and the press set together also in Bristol Borough.
Go ahead.
And that's what we kind of we have to keep doing. We have to make our voices heard.
I'm with you.
We cannot become complacent. That's what they want. If that's what it's like, it's in Michigan, you know, locking the people out of the state house,
right.
And then the pepper spray and this, that, and the other.
Yep. They want us to throw up our hands and give up and just, well, we can't change it. But we can. And thanks to people like you out in the streets, I think we'll do all right. Mary, I appreciate the time. I appreciate what you do. Thanks so much.
Thank you for letting me speak to you, Rick.
Best luck to you and your brother, and have a great holiday.
All right, you also. Bye-bye.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
We gotta do it today.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you. Confidential, initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. John Boehner is in a hot huff, fuming so furiously that he'd be red-faced were it not for that eerie orange-toned tan that he constantly has. The Republican House Speaker is angry that President Obama won't play Boehner ball with him in their ongoing altercation over ways to reduce the federal deficit. The GOP leader's pitch to Obama is that the deficit hole should be filled by cutting government spending and eliminating some tax deductions, not, most emphatically not, by increasing taxes on corporations and the rich, even by so little as a dime. But this is an EFAS pitch, a soccer ball. The trick is that Boehner and company want Democrats and the general public to agree to massive cuts without telling us which programs and deductions they would sacrifice. So far, Obama is refusing to go for this game of Boehner ball, instead standing firm and calmly saying to him, "If you want to spare the rich any burden and only cut back on regular folks, don't expect me to do dirty work for you. Make your pitch and take political responsibility for the pain you would cause." Oh, the huffing and puffing that ensued. "We put a serious offer on the table," wailed Boehner to the right-wing friendlies interviewing him on Fox TV. Only he hadn't. Not one specific cut had been named. So Obama still refused to be suckered into playing Boehner's game. This is Jim Hightower saying, with polls showing rising public scorn for his pitiful performance, Boehner has finally been forced to try another pitch. But even with a do-over, he balked. His latest proposal cuts $1.2 trillion from federal programs and eliminates $800 billion in tax exemptions, but still doesn't tell us which ones. As Casey Stengel asked the players of a terrible ball club he once managed, "Can't anyone here play this game?"
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
That's why I started giving these speeches. My job is not only commander-in-chief, but educator-in-chief. And I needed to say to the people, you bet it's tough.
Yeah, educator-in-chief. Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. Imagine what our education system would look like if that guy were the head of it. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, rick@therickSmithShow.com. According to a 2012 analysis of current population survey data conducted by the BLS, the proportion of the labor force composed of people ages 55 and older projected to rise from the 13% of the workforce that it was in 2000 up to nearly a quarter of the workforce by 2055. And the reality is we are. We've got a workforce that's getting older, but it's going to be policies pushed forth by the Republicans, really, and, you know, come along with the Democrats, because they're going to eventually come along with it. Under this guise, well, you know, Americans are living longer, so it just makes sense that we should raise that Medicare age. And they're really pushing this idea, well, you know, folks, you know, we're living longer, so you're going to have to, because they see the same demographic shift. They see it as, you know, folks get older, they're going to be a larger share of the workforce. Now, the question then becomes, because I keep saying all of this stuff that they're shoving down our throats, all of this stuff is the diversion. The real crisis, the real imminent threat to this nation is the fact that we're not creating enough jobs. And it's because we've got absolute gridlock in D.C. We've got Republicans pushing the same failed economic policies that got us into this mess in the first place. You know, tax cuts that we can't afford, deregulation that destroys a worker's ability to, get a little bit of the profits so that, you know, they have a little disposable income. You know, things that we used to understand that the Republicans don't want us to understand. And you look at 30 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomics, what's it gotten us? Well, we do have a nice, big, shiny billionaire class, largest in civilization. I guess we should be proud of that, right? We've allowed the very wealthy in the country to accumulate more and more and more by, of course, taking it from the bottom, you know, folks who aren't going to fight back and aren't going to do too much, which is why I keep saying I'm glad to see people out in the streets. This idea that we're going to shift Medicare, I mean, the big push, oh, we're just going to move it to 67. Well, what's it going to do to the cost of Medicare? Well, again, what we're going to do is the Medicare pool, it's going to raise the cost of the people who are on Medicare and make Medicare more expensive. This is a poison pill. I understand why they're doing this. They're doing it for two very distinct reasons. One, more profit for the insurance companies, because they can charge extraordinarily high rates. Three times? So older folks are going to pay much higher rates in those last couple of years. And the people who are on Medicare, it's going to cost more because, well, those are the people who are sick. The folks in the last few years of their lives, those are the folks that we pay all the costs for. As I've been saying for the longest time, if we want to bring down the cost of Medicare, if we want to solve our Medicare problem, if there is one, and there's some problems, open it up and expand the pool. Allow healthy younger people into it. But all we're doing is making the situation worse with this idea. And think about if you're an employer. You're going to get older workers who are going to want to stay around longer and jack up your health insurance rates. Or, like most states, they're at-will employee states, they're just going to get rid of their older workers for one reason or another. And then Medicaid is going to have to pick these folks up, which is going to, that's right, you're coming with me. It's going to make Medicaid more expensive. Again, the poison pill idea. This way you could point to us and say, hey, it's too costly. This is all by design. You know, people at the American Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation, they've thought this stuff out. Thought it out pretty solidly. The American people are kind of split. 30%, nearly 40% of the folks polled in the latest Associated GFK poll were in favor of raising the eligibility age, 48% dead opposed to it. And it breaks down pretty simply, as you would expect. Folks under 30, they were supportive. People in the 30 to 64 range, completely opposed to it. Seniors didn't really care. They were split. Well, you know what? The people are living longer. Yeah, we should go ahead. The interesting part is the people who had the strong opposition outnumbered the people who strongly supported it by 2-1. Because, and again, I go, it's that 30 to 60, it's that my generation group and a little bit older who see this as another theft from the working class, another concession of the folks at the bottom, another handout to the top for them to misuse. And I'm hoping that we wake up and we stop this before it happens. When we come back, I'm going to talk to somebody who was at one of the rallies in Pittsburgh where they were out telling Senator Bob Casey and Pat Toomey, you better go the right way because we're going to remember come election time. And I'm telling you, we better remember come election time where these folks, where they side. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
Monday, December 10th. Mars will reach perihelion, its closest point to the sun, in January 2013.
And true to its history, a major dust storm has shown up in the Martian southern hemisphere. NASA spotted the dust storm on November 10th, and they've been watching it grow. Over the century, astronomers have monitored these storms through telescopes, and now via spacecraft.
Dust storms affected huge areas of Mars in 2001 and 2007, but not since 2007. This is the first time since the Viking missions of the 1970s that scientists have been able to study a regional dust storm both from Mars orbit and with a weather station on the surface. That weather station is on the Mars rover Curiosity, which touched down in August 2012.
NASA says Curiosity's weather station has measured decreased air pressure and a slight rise in overnight low temperature associated with the ongoing dust storm. Another rover on Mars since 2004, called Opportunity, doesn't have a weather station. This rover is more vulnerable to the storm. If the dust storm were to cloud the sky over Opportunity, it might shut the rover down, because Opportunity relies on the sun for its energy.
So NASA scientists are watching, waiting to see if the dust storm will grow or subside. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Mars Dust Storm. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We stand united, undivided, we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it. The time is prime, pen is aligned, ain't no mistake. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened, has awakened a sleeping giant. Come on, now we can do it. We need to revive, react, and re-up the labor movement. Anything in life.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. So again, folks out in the street today in Pittsburgh telling Senator Casey, you know what? Take care of the working class folks first. Extend those tax cuts for the folks who need it the most. Not the people at the top, not the ones who have done wildly well over the last 30 years, but the folks who are desperately in need of help. Stop focusing on the fiscal mirage. Focus on the true crisis, which are we need jobs. We need smart trade policy. We need to enforce those policies, and we need to get people back to work. That's how we fix all of our problems. It's that simple. Today in Pittsburgh, they were at the office there of Senator Casey. I've got one of the folks who was at the event, Charles Hickerson. Thanks for taking time for me. He's a member of One Pittsburgh, one of the great groups, grassroots groups out there doing outstanding work. Charles, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem.
Tell me, what'd you guys do today?
Well, a bunch of dedicated one Pittsburghers and various other people marched in the rain to Bob Casey's offices in downtown Pittsburgh. And we had a contingent of people who went actually into the building to met with a representative of Bob Casey to answer questions about what was his stance on these budget proposals.
And what kind of response did you get?
Well, essentially they said that he was holding firm on making the rich pay their fair share. But he was wavering a little bit on, raising the, Medicare age
to
67. So it is our determination to go to Washington and go to his offices where he's working and confront him again.
Absolutely. And this is what it's going to take, not just in Casey, not just in the case of Senator Bob Casey, but Pat Toomey and all of our members of the House.
Exactly. Well, we plan on covering all the bases as much as we can when we get there.
Right.
We have some momentum behind us. We're at a very critical point in time in history, as I pointed out this afternoon, where these people are trying to take us back to the days of the robber barons.
Oh, yeah. I say they want to take us back to the good old days of the 90s, the 1890s.
Exactly. And, we've already heard about the record number of profits they made this quarter. And if you watch some of the statistics that I saw on MSNBC, you saw the graph go up for the wealthy, up to the top of the graph, while the wages for working people were going down to the bottom of the graph.
Yep.
Of the graph.
And what you're talking about, the reality is corporate earnings have never been higher, profits have not been higher, and also at the other end of that spectrum, the percentage of wages has never been lower.
Exactly. And people need to open up their eyes. And it's unjust, and it's immoral.
Which is exactly why you're seeing
immoral.
Well, which is why you're seeing what's going on in Michigan, Charles, what went on in Indiana, what's going on in states all across this country. And I keep telling people, hey, don't get safe, because Pennsylvania's on the list. They're on the menu.
Oh, yes, exactly. And they're trying to pass that law in Michigan, despite the fact that only 6% of the people polled supported the cotton picking bill. That's outrageous. I just saw that on television tonight on the Young Turks. It was this is outrageous. These people don't care about what we think and how we feel. They just don't care. And this is it's bizarre.
Well, it's an authoritarian power grab. It is exactly what it is. The wealthy have bought the best democracy money can buy, and now they're cashing their chips in.
Yes, well, they can only go so far with this, because I think the American public is going to eventually get smarten up and reach the threshold.
I'm glad to see folks like you in the streets. I mean, this is what it's going to take. It's going to take committed folks like you. It's going to take committed folks like Mary Downing, who we spoke to earlier, people who are going to get their boots on the ground and talk to their family and their neighbors and their friends and get them out in the streets until there's a movement that cannot be stopped and we fix the problems that we really have, which, again, you go back to the real crisis we have in this country is a jobs crisis.
Yes. And if you're going to have if you're going to have a capitalistic system, you've got to provide jobs for people to buy stuff. That's just common sense.
Yep.
And and I'll tell you something. I'm 59 years old, so I was a teenager at the time of the social revolution of the 60s. But I have never really been a participant in activism and things of that nature until at this point in my life. And I am, because over the course of my lifetime, I have seen eye-popping things that have happened that just I can't, it's like I don't have any other choice. Yep. I've got to speak out. I've got to march. I've got to protest, because it's so outrageous.
And my kids' generation need it desperately.
Excuse me?
My kids' generation need people like you, need people like me, need our listeners to get involved and get activated, because you know what? It's going to be my kids who, they're the ones who are going to suffer in 10, 20, 30, 50 years.
Oh, my God, and yes, and that is why you're absolutely right. That is why it is so important to educate these people, because these young kids, because, you know, it's not just America that is at stake. It is the world that is at stake. And, you know, if you leave it to these people, you know, the environment will be unsustainable for human life. They will have raped everything that they could get out of it. For what?
Well, so
much money can you spend?
It's not a matter of spending. You know, here's the thing. I think what we've learned, Charles, is not about how much money they can spend. It's about how much control they can have. Because, you know, we're continually told if we give the wealthy more, if we give them more, they will spend it because they know how to invest. They're the job creators, remember? And this,
yeah.
It'll be like rivers of gold and honey just trickling down upon us.
Well, that's exactly my point. It does go beyond money because you can only spend so much. So after you spend it all, what is there left but you to just exert your primitive urge for power and control, which is sick. That is mental illness. And, you know, they talk about the makers and the takers, but these people are the takers.
Absolutely.
They take and grab for everything that they can get. And we make everything that they get. And, you know, if you're not going to be a government for the people, then, you know, the next logical step is that the people have to overthrow the government. And eventually it may come to that.
Well, what we do is we throw the bums out, and as you pointed out, we need to activate, educate, and engage people to vote for the right politicians, to get these bums out on both sides of the political spectrum, to start talking about people who see working class values, who see the end of the road for folks. This idea of raising the Medicare age to 67 as one of the first clubs out of the bag, to me, is just insane. But it shows.
Not only that, but they have. But they're justifying the things that they're doing based upon figures that were incurred through two wars that were not paid for. And those wars cost us billions of dollars. Stop the wars, and we can get some revenue going.
Now, let's do some nation building at home, right, Charles?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
We have infrastructure issues that need dire attention.
Last question I've got for you. I heard there was supposed to be a big a plane going over top with the message. Did it get off the ground?
I haven't heard about that.
Okay, because I was the big thing that someone sent me is they were flying a plane around and the message was, you know, fix the debt and do the keep the cuts for the middle class, and well, let's go after the very wealthy. All right, well, I guess I got that wrong.
Well, if they haven't done it, it's a great idea. Unfortunately, the weather is kind of prohibitive right now, but maybe tomorrow when it clears up a little bit.
And I hope you'll be back in the streets.
Yeah, what'd you say?
I hope you'll be back in the streets, and I hope the folks at One Pittsburgh will be as well. I got to take a break here, Charles. I appreciate the time. I appreciate your activism. Keep the passion. Keep the faith, brother.
Same to you, partner. Thanks for having me
on. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Quick break. Right back with Hour 2. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up at 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Teaching America the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Michigan is on the path to becoming a right-to-work state after Republicans in the legislature fast-tracked bills on Thursday. Due to a rule that prevents both chambers from voting on the same legislation for 5 days, the soonest the measures can be sent to Governor Rick Snyder's desk is Tuesday. In November, Michiganders rejected a law passed in 2011 that gave emergency financial managers broad powers, which included the power to dissolve union contracts. In an effort to stop the right-to-work legislation from being repealed in a same way, Republicans inserted financial measures into the legislation. Deborah Nault is a registered nurse in Michigan, and she's seen firsthand the difference between having union representation and not.
Well, you know, having worked in the same institution in my career, I worked there in a non-union organization and then when it became unionized. And there's a huge difference. I mean, we have a voice in the workplace. We have a voice in our staffing. You know, when something isn't right, you know, we can speak up without fear of being reprimanded. And it was not like that before. And so, if with right to work, you know, it's going to weaken unions. And, you know, we're not going to have that voice in the workplace, you know, that we enjoy now. And, you know, healthcare, you know, has become very, very complicated, you know, having been in for over 30 years. It's just not as easy to be a nurse anymore. You know, in the olden days, you know, you didn't need as many nurses because the patients weren't as sick. There wasn't so much technology. There wasn't so much charting. I mean, now all of us are going, you know, to computer documentation and EMRs. I mean, there's just so much that's involved in nursing now that, you know, we just can't do it the way that we did it 15, 20 years ago. And so not to have a voice in what's happening in the workplace, I think it's really going to hurt patient safety. You know, it can be costly. You know, but you have to spend the money up front so that you don't, you know, run into problems in the long run. And I don't think that they always see it that way.
Major rallies are expected in downtown Lansing Monday and Tuesday in a last-ditch effort to convince the governor to not sign the bill into law. Snyder had previously said that right to work wasn't on his agenda, but in recent days said he felt the law is actually necessary due to voters voting out his emergency financial manager law.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
It was an inside job. Found a world connected. Your inner protest. No memory is yet when. It was an inside job. Like it always is. Talk it up. To the business as usual.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Rick Smith Show. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. You know, today across the country, we saw people holding candlelight vigils under the banner of "Don't push seniors off the fiscal cliff. We need to be taxing Wall Street." And they're pushing the Inclusive Prosperity Act, House Resolution 6411, which was introduced in the fall. The folks at RobinhoodTax.org are saying, look, like any other sales tax, we should have a transaction tax on all of those high-speed trading and all of that trading on Wall Street. They should be paying for their own oversight. And you know what? The people who crash the economy, maybe we should be asking for maybe just a little bit from them. But the bigger thing is, you know, this fiscal mirage, as I've been calling it, because this is a self-imposed crisis. They set this up so that they can get exactly what they want, which is to push that Medicare age off and screw working people at the bottom. Because, hey, time's right. There's a crisis. And what do Americans do better than react to crisis? Roll up their sleeves and sacrifice a little bit. And the Republicans know this. Instead of pursuing policies that would get people back to work, the real crisis, the jobs crisis, they've created one, which is why I'm glad to be talking to my next guest. He's written the book, Back to Full Employment, Professor Robert Pullen. Thanks for taking time for me.
I'm really happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
You know, and looking at your book, this is stuff that I've been talking about for years, rejecting the neoliberal trade policies that have gotten us into the mess that we're in and start pursuing full employment policies, getting people back to work at decent paying jobs. So thank you for writing the book.
Well, thank you. And it sounds like with your introduction, you've pretty much covered all the main themes in the book. So maybe I should be interviewing you.
No, but, you know, here's the thing. I mean, they've really set up this crisis. And you look at this fiscal mirage, because I don't call it a cliff. They've created this. They made this mess. They could easily undo it. They've created this as a diversion to the fact that they haven't done what Republicans said they would do in 2010, which was laser-like focus on jobs, jobs, jobs. I've not seen it.
Yeah, that certainly, like I said, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm really happy that you're emphasizing that. The fiscal cliff debate is a complete distraction. There is no fiscal crisis. There is no fiscal crisis. And just so that people believe me, I'll just cite a statistic, which is that the government's interest payments, how much we have to pay every month to cover our debts, just like a household has to pay its mortgage every month, is near a historic low, not a historic high, a historic low. When I tell people this, they don't believe me, but it's true. And the reason is, yes, we have been borrowing a lot to get out of the recession, but we're borrowing at extremely low interest rates. Today, the federal government can sell U.S. Treasury bonds at 0.6%, less than 1%. So that means that the amount that we have to pay back is negligible. Under Ronald Reagan, we were paying 15% of the total government outlays, the total government budget, on interest payments. Now we're paying half that, 7.5%. So it's, the whole thing is manufactured. The real crisis is exactly what you said. The real crisis is a jobs crisis.
But Professor, I just heard a good Republican senator, good, honest, upstanding, family values, God-loving Republican tell me we're going to be like Greece.
Well, we're not. You know, unfortunately, there's some very eminent people in my profession, economists, who are saying the same thing, and that gives politicians the justification to make these outrageous claims. Greece does have problems. We can fix Greece's problems in a fair way, and we could talk about that if you want. I'd be very happy to. But focusing on the U.S., we do not have a fiscal crisis. If you define a fiscal crisis, as I would, as saying we're facing the prospect of not being able to cover our obligations next month or in 2 months or 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, if that's your definition, as it is mine, we are nowhere close to a fiscal crisis. We are further away from a fiscal crisis than we have been in the last 30 years.
But here's the thing, Professor, and I look at this and I, you know, you have to have this crisis. You have to create the shiny thing. You've got to get people worked up and lathered up that, oh, the end of the world is coming, because then they won't sacrifice Medicare or Social Security, or they won't continue to give handouts to the very, very wealthy. We need this crisis or, well, everything will stop.
Yeah, well, look, we have a serious jobs crisis. We had a financial crisis created by Wall Street. The severity of which we haven't seen since the 1930s, and that crashed the economy, as you said. And even the employment numbers that came out Friday that showed the official unemployment rate falling from 7.9 to 7.7%. In fact, the only reason the unemployment rate went down by that modest amount was because people dropped out of the labor force.
Right.
The job creation actually went down.
And the 5 million.
How can we say there's progress on jobs when we're not actually creating more jobs? We're just seeing people discouraged and moving out of the labor force. So this is already almost 4 years after the crisis. And so it's time to recognize that this is not an ordinary recession or recovery. We're not going to get back to a strong employment situation unless we take strong measures to support that.
Are you going to use
and meanwhile, we're stuck talking about a non-problem, which is the non-problem of a fiscal crisis.
Are you going to use the dreaded S word?
Which is the dreaded S word?
Stimulus, the dreaded S word.
Oh, yes.
You're not going to say that we should be investing in roads and bridges. And,
absolutely, I am saying that. I just didn't know whether it was dreaded or not.
Well, according to my Republican friends, any investment in our nation, that's dreaded because, yeah. You know, the free market should do that. The invisible man. Come on.
Well, the invisible hand can do a few things. You know, if we want to know the price of blue jeans or sneakers, I'm willing to let the invisible hand figure that one out. If we're going to talk about long-term investing in our future in education and infrastructure in the green economy, there's no way this can get settled on the basis of the invisible hand. And the reason is these things have societal benefits, huge societal benefits, that can't be captured by any single business trying to invest and make money in these areas. So these activities have to be done, if they're going to be done at all, if they're going to be done right, they have to be done by the public sector. There's no way we're going to fight climate change and build a green economy on the basis of relying on the market, because as far as the market's concerned, you know, if you can get cheap energy through fracking, great. And who cares what it does to our groundwater, and who cares what it does to our greenhouse gas emissions? The market doesn't sort those things out. That has to be done through public policy.
Yeah. Who does it? But the sad reality is the invisible hand has been giving me the invisible finger for far too long. And what we need is smart policy. We need people who are going to think into the future, kind of like we used to. And I look at, you know, the Recovery Act that President Obama, you know, pushed mostly through in 2009. I think it was too small. It should have been much larger, and it should have been much more directly targeted, not so many tax cuts. But one of the things I thought he did well was help the states a little bit, because I look at Pennsylvania. We've cut $2 billion from K-12 education in this state, laid off tens of thousands of teachers, laid off thousands of public sector workers. I mean, any recovery that we did have, well, has been just stymied by the fact that we're losing jobs in the public sector.
Yeah, well, it seems like we agree on, again, you're taking stuff that right out of what I would say. And the stimulus program that we need has to focus, first of all, on covering unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed. These people have suffered at the hands of Wall Street. This is not their fault. And at the very, very least, we need to be able to sustain them in a minimally decent way. And in doing so, that also puts money back into the economy because they're going to spend. So that's step one for a stimulus. Step two is supporting the state and local governments, because state and local governments collectively are the largest employer in the country. So if you undertake austerity at the level of state and local governments, like you were just describing with teachers getting laid off, then you're never going to get out of the jobs crisis. So we have to set a floor, and we have to expand investments in education, healthcare, public safety. Those are the things that the state and local governments do.
Absolutely.
And on top of that, we have to invest in infrastructure and the green economy. And I agree, the stimulus program of 2009 did all of these things, not adequately. You're right, there was too much money that went to tax breaks. The total size of the stimulus was huge by historic standards, but still small because of the magnitude of the crisis. Was also unprecedented since the Great Depression, and people didn't know that was how bad the recession was going to be. Now we do know. And so now that we know, it's time to take action to counteract it and get unemployment down fast. If we just let unemployment meander the way we have, we're going to be in 7-8% unemployment 2-3 more years. And by that time, we'll be all set for the next financial bubble that's going to blow up and push unemployment way back up again.
Yeah, and not to mention you won't see the gain in wages as well, because you'll have stagnant wages because there won't be anything pushing it up.
The main thing that we know that pushed up wages in the last 15 years was in the late 1990s was, unfortunately, it was the financial bubble, but the financial bubble then created low unemployment. Unemployment went down below 4%, and real wages went up especially rapidly for people at the low end of the labor market. So when people tell me, oh, you know, you can't get full employment anymore because of globalization or whatever, the evidence tells us that's not true. The evidence says we need some strong investment projects, not a financial bubble. So let's invest in building the green economy. Let's invest in infrastructure. Let's invest in education. And we can get the same outcome in terms of employment gains and low unemployment that we got in the late 1990s through a financial bubble.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on the full employment. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. The book is Back to Full Employment. Robert Pullen is the author. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com where you can go to pick it up. Third caller gets the book. I'll make sure that we get it to you. Last line of questioning I've got for you. And it comes back down to the people who I think created this entire mess. We've had for 30 years tax policy that says, well, we need to give all of this wealth to the very top because they're the job creators, because they know what to do with the money. Yet I look at where all the money is being stashed. They're hoarding tons of money. I saw a report about $2 trillion they're sitting on that they're supposed to be creating jobs with, just not happening. How do we get that money into play? How do we make sure that the money they're hoarding overseas gets put into play? What should we be doing policy-wise?
Well, step one is there are a couple big cords of cash. One is with the commercial banks. They're holding about $1.5 trillion in cash that they got for free because they can borrow for free at the central, at the Federal Reserve. That's number one. And number two is the hoards that the corporations have, which is about $2 trillion. Add those two things up. You're looking at $3.5 trillion. That's like 20% of the entire U.S. economy. Now the banks, I think, is a place to start because they got the money for free. So if we were giving out low interest rates, no zero interest rate loans to the banks, then we have to at least stipulate that the banks, put the money back into our communities. And the, banks have been not lending, especially to small businesses, and small businesses are starved for credit. So put the money, let's say that you have $1.5 trillion, and let's say they only put a half of it back into the economy, $750 billion we're talking about. That would be more than enough to push the unemployment rate down in the range of 5 to 4% over the next couple of years.
So why aren't they doing it?
What?
Why aren't they doing it?
Why aren't they?
I mean, why are they just hoarding it?
Well, because they don't like lending to small businesses because it's more work. You have to evaluate. You have to do it one by one. They think risks are too high, and they'd rather just sit around and wait for the next financial bubble to come along and have all this money to throw at the bubble and see the markets go up, make profits that way. That's why we have to regulate the financial markets and force them to start thinking the way they did 30 years ago when we did have financial regulations, which was to focus on productive activities, productive investments that create jobs.
I'm with you, but how do we get them to do that? What policy is there? Is there any policy that we
can push? I actually have a couple of specific examples right in the little book, my book, Back to Full Employment. Number one, you can tax what we could call excess reserves of the banks. So you set an amount that you think constitutes excess, and by excess I mean above and beyond what is reasonably necessary to cover contingencies. So, the banks have $1.5 trillion. There's no way that you can make an argument they need anything close to that to cover all possible contingencies. Even if you said that their that the defaults on their mortgages were maintained at the 2009 level. Okay, so at the crisis level, we're having mortgage defaults, which, of course, I don't want to see happen. But let's say that happens. There's no way you can argue that the banks need more than, say, $300 billion to cover all that. So on top of that, let's say $300 billion for all the mortgage instability. Now let's double that. Well, that gets you to $600 billion, which is a lot of money, but that still leaves almost $1 trillion that I would call excess reserves, and so those excess reserves should be taxed and create a disincentive for the banks to hold it as a hoard and an incentive for banks to look for opportunities to lend for productive business.
And this way we, as the Republicans love to say, they love small business, this way we get some working capital into the hands of small business.
That's right.
And
that's
create
right.
jobs.
Yeah.
Seems like common sense to me. It's a shame we're not trying it.
Well, you know, it's got to come from the bottom up. It's got to come from people in the labor movement. I like the fact that you started your discussion talking about taxing Wall Street, which is also something I discuss in the book. And it's actually an area where I participated in the drafting of the bill you were talking about on behalf of the National Nurses Union, who have been very active in supporting this bill, very creative, fighting hard. And so this is the kind of thing that we need more of.
I'm right there with you. Again, the book, Back to Full Employment, written by Professor Robert Pullen. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Professor, I appreciate the time. I'd love to have you come back and talk with us again.
I'd be very happy to. Nice talking to you, Rick.
You too. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
John Boehner is in a hot huff, fuming so furiously that he'd be red-faced were it not for that eerie orange-toned tan that he constantly has. The Republican House Speaker is angry that President Obama won't play Boehner ball with him in their ongoing altercation over ways to reduce the federal deficit. The GOP leader's pitch to Obama is that the deficit hole should be filled by cutting government spending and eliminating some tax deductions, not, most emphatically not, by increasing taxes on corporations and the rich, even by so little as a dime. But this is an EFAS pitch, a soccer ball. The trick is that Boehner and company want Democrats and the general public to agree to massive cuts without telling us which programs and deductions they would sacrifice. So far, Obama is refusing to go for this game of Boehner ball, instead standing firm and calmly saying to him, "If you want to spare the rich any burden and only cut back on regular folks, don't expect me to do your dirty work for you. Make your pitch and take political responsibility for the pain you would cause." Oh, the huffing and puffing that ensued. "We put a serious offer on the table," wailed Boehner to the right-wing friendlies interviewing him on Fox TV. Only, he hadn't. Not one specific cut had been named. So Obama still refused to be suckered into playing Boehner's game. This is Jim Hightower saying, with polls showing rising public scorn for his pitiful performance, Boehner has finally been forced to try another pitch. But even with a do-over, he balked. His latest proposal cuts $1.2 trillion from federal programs and eliminates $800 billion in tax exemptions, but still doesn't tell us which ones. As Casey Stengel asked the players of a terrible ball club he once managed, can't anyone here play this game?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
And you know, the sandwich guys let you touch this, touch this, touch this. Go pay the cashier. There's your sandwich. It's amazing.
Oh, ho, ho, it's magic. You know, never believe it's not so. It's magic. You know, never believe it's not so.
According to the folks at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, if our lawmakers allow the Bush tax cuts to remain in effect on income from $250,000 to $1 million, some members of Congress are, which they're talking about, households with cash incomes above $1 million would receive, on average, an additional tax cut of $31,610 in 2013. So look, even if we said, you know what, we're going to let that, we're going to go up to $1 million, and we're going to tax everything above that at the Clinton rates, someone making over $1 million is still going to pocket $31,610. So by saying, well, we're going to take the top 2% rate away, it's not like they're not getting any cut. It's at that top rate. And you know, I go back and I talk about the good socialist years. The Republican Dwight David Eisenhower. Good socialist years, if you will. Anything over $1.6 million in today's dollars was taxed at 92%. So that dollar over $1.6 million was taxed at 92%. That's what we're talking about. Once you get to that threshold, once you get to that point and you're making $1.6 million, I think it's only, you know, hey, you know, times are tough. Remember, it was a crisis. Country's going to collapse. We're in deep debt. We're going to be Greece. Isn't that what they're telling us? And in order to solve our Greece problem, we've got to kick Granny off Social Security. We've got to push Medicare off a couple years longer so that, you know what, some folks die in the process. Oh, we can't ask for the wildly wealthy to do a little bit. No, 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 no. Then they won't hoard their money because we're told that they're the job creators. Yet what I see, and according to Robert Pullen in his book, Back to Full Employment, commercial banks sitting on $1.6 trillion. That's money not circulating in the economy. Non-financial industry holdings, $2 trillion being sat on. That's money that should be in the economy. And why is it being sat on? Well, because the wealth class, the people who want to buy this country, the people who want to own all of us, things aren't bad enough. We're not willing to sacrifice enough. There's an opportunity to really turn the screws in the next couple of years. And if they can make us a little more desperate and a little more desperate, with a glimpse of maybe, hopefully, oh, we're going to bring jobs, we'll give up our rights at work. We'll give up our rights to Medicare and Social Security, the right to some dignity in our retirement. We'll give that up because we got to eat now. And they know that. Use this to their every advantage they can possibly come up with. And I looked at this thing in Michigan. Michigan didn't even make the argument that Indiana made. Indiana, when they wanted to push their no rights at work agenda, what'd they say? We could steal jobs from Illinois. New Hampshire was saying the same thing when they wanted to push their no rights at work agenda. Oh, we could steal jobs from Vermont and New York. That's how they're selling it to us? We can steal from each other? And the answer is yes. And I keep asking the question, what happens when there's no one left? We can't steal from our neighbors anymore. What then? Well, then, just low wages. Just then, no health care. Just then, no pension. And oh, by the way, no Social Security, no Medicare. I'm telling you the world that they want to take us to. all we have to do is look to history. Look to the good old times of the 90s, the 1890s, where they ruled the roost. That's what today's robber barons want. They want the power and the authoritarian control that their brethren of the past once had. And I'm telling you, we had better figure out how to stand up and fight back and stop it. And we better stop it now. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, and talk a little bit about what's going on in Michigan and more about who is behind what's going on in Michigan. Quick break, back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Monday, December 10th. Mars will reach perihelion, its closest point to the Sun, in January 2013.
And true to its history, a major dust storm has shown up in the Martian southern hemisphere. NASA spotted the dust storm on November 10th, and they've been watching it grow. Over the century, astronomers have monitored these storms through telescopes, and now via spacecraft.
Dust storms affected huge areas of Mars in 2001 and 2007, but not since 2007. This is the first time since the Viking missions of the 1970s that scientists have been able to study a regional dust storm both from Mars orbit and with a weather station on the surface. That weather station is on the Mars rover Curiosity, which touched down in August 2012.
NASA says Curiosity's weather station has measured decreased air pressure and a slight rise in overnight low temperature associated with the ongoing dust storm. Another rover on Mars since 2004, called Opportunity, doesn't have a weather station. This rover is more vulnerable to the storm. If the dust storm were to cloud the sky over Opportunity, it might shut the rover down, because Opportunity relies on the sun for its energy.
So NASA scientists are watching, waiting to see if the dust storm will grow or subside. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Mars Dust Storm. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee in a right-to-work state at a low cost with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson.
You know,
Zach Womp, the Republican, former congressman from Tennessee. That's the bottom line with this whole no rights at work agenda. Less wages, less health care, less benefits, more profits for the very wealthy. Screw you, screw me, but more for them. Our headline of the day comes from the New Yorker magazine, the Borowitz Report. Billionaires warn higher taxes could prevent them from buying politicians. And you look at what happened in Michigan. You look at this whole push towards the no rights at work agenda and all of this money that's been pushed behind this by front groups like Americans for Prosperity and the Mackinac Center and Michigan Freedom Fund and a whole bunch of these really, really wonderfully euphemistically named groups who with freedom in the title and prosperity and all of this. Well, what are they really pushing? Well, they're pushing a ripoff. As my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because he understands return on investment, and we should too, which is why I've asked Rachel Tabaknik, a fellow with the Political Research Associates, publiceye.org, their website, to come talk to us about what went on in Michigan and really the people behind it. Rachel, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, this thing got rammed through. A lot of people were caught by surprise. The big money really, really, really got behind this and rammed this through, even though their governor there in Michigan said he wasn't interested. It was divisive, not for 2012. Yet in one day, they rammed this through.
This was an ambush. But what we need to keep in mind is the groundwork for this was laid over a period of years and years. So this is not just something that happened overnight, even with the help of big money. That foundation was laid there by some very big money donors over a period of more than the last decade.
And you look at the names, the Mackinac Center, one of the big right-wing think tanks in Michigan, the Americans for Prosperity group, the Koch brothers front group. You look at all of these groups, and as you pointed out, for years, and we've got the same kind of things here in Pennsylvania. You've got the Tinky Tank over here, the Commonwealth Foundation here in Harrisburg, one of these right-wing groups funded by the big money people, pushing the exact same agenda.
Well, what we also need to note about that, I think probably a lot of your listeners are now familiar with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and have learned how it is that all these bills come from this one organization out to the 50 states. We've got a similar thing with these right-wing think tanks. They're all linked together in something called the State Policy Network. And the one there in Michigan is one of the biggest in the country. And they devise and put out a lot of the publicity and propaganda reports and so forth for things like right-to-work laws.
Yeah, you know, I keep saying, you know, and I keep trying to educate folks on this. On all of this is the money folks behind this, the handful of billionaires who set up these think tanks and set up, you know, talk radio programs and authors and fund, you know, these professors who write these books and push this agenda. It's all this, really this incestuous relationship that all of these different pieces have pushing the same agenda.
And in Michigan, there's been a family that's been behind a lot of this for years and years. It's the DeVos family. This is an incredibly wealthy family. Richard DeVos, the patriarch of the family, now spends a lot of time in Florida. He owns the Orlando Magic. But he was one of the co-founders of Amway. And according to Forbes, he's now worth about $5.1 billion.
Wow.
Then there's his son, Dick DeVos, who's the one who's been so politically active in recent years. He ran for governor of Michigan and lost in 2006. Despite the fact it's estimated he spent something like $35 million of his own money. He's married to Betsy DeVos, and her father was Edgar Prince, who is also obscenely wealthy. He's deceased now. Betsy DeVos's brother is Eric Prince, who founded Blackwater USA and Blackwater Worldwide, privatizing military functions. So this is a family with a lot of money to burn, which has become very involved in politics in both Michigan and around the country.
And here in Pennsylvania, because the name Betsy DeVos synonymous with charter schools and vouchers and that whole education privatization movement.
Hopefully that rings a bell to Pennsylvanians, because in 2010 they tried to pull a similar ambush here. It didn't quite work. That was with school vouchers. Early in 2010, American Federation for Children, which is headed by Betsy DeVos, founded a PAC, which they named Students First. It wasn't immediately apparent that it was affiliated with American Federation for Children. And then they proceeded to dump millions of dollars in the Pennsylvania elections in 2010. succeeding in helping Corbett to win with some political theater that went on, but then they did not succeed with passing SB1, the school voucher bill.
Right.
But that was a similar, that was supposed to work in a similar way, I think, as an ambush with millions and millions of dollars dumped into a state practically overnight with people not knowing where it's coming from.
Yeah, and the thing that bothers me is, you know, you look at this, and as you pointed out, it's an ambush. I've got so many of my Republican friends who say, well, you know, they're Republicans are going to take over, and they're going to bring good government, open, transparent government. Yet everything that they've done, both here in Pennsylvania and across the country, has been anything but transparent, anything but open, and anything but good government.
Yes, and like you said, in this case in Michigan, this has been unbelievable. As you were saying, there was every indication that they would not pursue these right-to-work bills. Then in a matter of just a few days, they sprang into action. A group called Michigan Freedom Fund suddenly started spending enormous amounts of money running television and print ads. That Freedom Fund happens to be run by the guy who was a campaign manager for Dick DeVos in 2006 and works for one of the DeVos companies.
Say it isn't so.
It is so. And so, you know, it's like somebody said, go. And, you know, all of this money suddenly arrives on the scene in support of all kinds of advertising, publicity. Michigan Chamber of Commerce says, oh, yeah, we do support this right-to-work bill, although they had not committed to that in the past. And so, you know, when it was time to go, they can throw millions of dollars into something like this.
When the money speaks, our politicians know how to jump.
Yes. And I think something that's important to note, if you look at the right to work bills, the school voucher bills, Dick DeVos was back in 2002, gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation is sort of the granddaddy of right-wing think tanks, and they've given so much money that there's a room named after the DeVos family there. But he gave a speech in 2002 outlining how the school voucher effort should be moved from to the state level. And not only should it be moved to the state level, but then instead of trying to have all of these ballot initiatives where everybody gets to vote, that they would move to the state legislature. And he actually talked about, in this speech, a system of rewards and punishments. So you would use money to reward or punish legislators for participating in this effort to get school vouchers. Or if they wouldn't participate, you'd use money to run people against them, run ads against them to punish them.
Yeah, we saw that here in Pennsylvania. I mean, you look at Hardy Williams, the senator from the Philadelphia area, whole bunch of money into his coffers to run on the platform of bringing vouchers and charter schools. And you look at James Roebuck, a representative in the Philadelphia area. They ran someone against him with huge resources. I mean, he beat the woman in the primary, but still, you're absolutely right. They're punishing those who would dare go against them and rewarding those who they've got in their pocket.
Yes, and the woman who has run against Roebuck, and this is in the Democratic primaries, the vast majority of her funding came from American Federation for Children through Students First, but then through an array of new political action committees, PACs, with names that don't mean anything to anybody. So they keep finding more and more creative ways to hide this money. For instance, we're talking about the big state policy network member, the Mackinac Foundation, the Mackinac Policy Center in Michigan. They get money from the big name donors that you would expect, DeVos, Koch, you know, the people that you would expect to give this money, but they also now have something called the donor fund. So in order to be invisible, these same people can put money into the donor fund, and then the donor fund gives money to these right-wing think tanks.
Nice.
So it's becoming harder and harder to track that money.
So at the end of the day, and, you know, I keep going back to how do we solve the problems that we have in our political arena, money being one, the biggest one. Citizens United pretty much opened the floodgates, but behind the Citizens United is all of this money that goes into these think tanks and funding all of these, the ALEC and all of these groups that do this work that you've laid out.
Right, and in the meantime, you know, hopefully something will be done in the future about this money, particularly the dark money that's not accounted for going into politics. But in the meanwhile, people need to get educated about who nationally and who in our states are behind these things, and to look at the organizations. For instance, you can go online and pull up the State Policy Network, and you can go state by state and see what the State Policy Network member is, or perhaps multiple ones, in your state. So, for instance, as you were saying, if you click on Pennsylvania, you will see that our State Policy Network member is the Commonwealth Foundation.
Sure. And, of course, to tie this to Michigan, the guy who heads the Tinky Tank over there actually came from the Mackinac Center.
He did. In 2002, he came from there. And when he was there, he was helping the DeVosses try to pass vouchers there in Michigan.
Yeah. And he loves telling the story that he was a public school teacher.
Yes. Now, a little bit on that, the person we're talking about, the president of the Commonwealth Foundation, on the day that this bill was rammed through in Michigan last week, he was with the York County 912 Patriots, and he described this as a Christmas gift to Michiganders, the right to work bill.
Yeah, well, at least the one Michigan person, the DeVos person.
Christmas gift to DeVos. That's very true.
Because the polling that I've seen on this, Rachel, the polling I've seen, people of Michigan don't want it.
No, and this is why this is so deceptive. For instance, this television ad that the Michigan Freedom Fund has put up that I was talking about has big lettering across it saying "Save Collective Bargaining." So they're advertising this right to work bill as saving collective bargaining.
Well, much like the Republicans are saying they're going to save Medicare and save Social Security by destroying it. Same
yes.
thing. But, you know, I guess, you know, you go back to the book 1984, you know, up is down, back is forward, whatever. It's this political doublespeak.
Yeah, let me point listeners out to another website if they want to see who's working, pushing right to work in Pennsylvania. There's a PA Right to Work website. And if you go to the links, you can see not only the Commonwealth Foundation and the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy, you can see the list of people who are working in this state to try to do this in Pennsylvania.
And they're pretty upfront about it. I mean, you know, I've seen some of the folks, you know, they're upfront about it. They want to take the rights of workers away. They want to make sure that the very wealthy have this kind of control, because they believe that the job creators will be benevolent and they will be, well, they'll create jobs, even though it hasn't happened yet, but they believe it.
Yes. And if you look at the actual statistics, not the one coming out of the right, out of these right-wing think tanks, but if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the actual statistics, you'll see that right to work reduces wages, reduces benefits. The lowest average incomes in the country are often in right to work states. The infant mortality rate is higher.
All the negative things, child poverty, food stamps, need for Medicaid and programs from the government, LIHEAP, and all the negatives through the roof. But you know what you can do? And the argument, like in Indiana, the argument was, we can steal jobs from Illinois and New Hampshire. We can steal jobs from Vermont and all of these states. We can steal jobs from other people. That's how that's Republican job creation right there at work.
Yes, and it's a race to the bottom. You know, the state with the lowest wages wins, supposedly, this race to the bottom. I saw a journalist only half jokingly say that, you know, when a state offers labor for free, then they will win.
Well, Georgia tried that.
Slavery.
Well, Georgia tried that. They said, come, we'll give you our prisoners. And there was actually, they've actually got a law down there where they can, if you're unemployed, you can get unemployed workers to work for free for a period of time. In fact, Obama had actually thought about putting that in his Jobs Act to get people, well, we need people that have internships so they'll work for free while on unemployment. That's where the Republicans want to take us. That's where corporatists want to take us.
Well, I grew up in the South. Where labor has been a dirty word for years. And when I was growing up, you know, people said, okay, we don't have unions. We have these lower wages. We'll draw the jobs. But of course, those textile mills now are gone.
Yep.
Those jobs went overseas. It didn't help them to have lower wages, no benefits, no health care.
Last question I've got for you, in looking at all of this, and you know why I think it's important that we talk about what goes on in Michigan and in Wisconsin and Ohio and other places, is it's right here at home. And, you know, in looking at what's going on and the big money that's out there, Pennsylvania, do you believe, is absolutely on the agenda to become one of these no-rights-at-work states? Do you think all of this ugliness, do you think it's here?
I believe Pennsylvania is a target, just like we have been a target of the school vouchers. I do believe that there is mobilization. There were articles that came out today with statements from the governor and others saying that right to work wouldn't fly here right now. But I think they will say that right up to the moment that they're ready to go with it.
Right up to the minute that
they ram it down your throat. As they did in Michigan.
Yeah, right up to the minute, just like Michigan, right up to the minute that they ram it down your throat. I look at this, and at some point, I'm hoping that the more we talk about this, the more folks wake up and realize the money is the problem. Rachel, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Rachel Tabaknik, fellow with the Political Research Associates Group, publiceye.org, the website. Quick break, right back after this.
It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out,
where's our government?
Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, these are their lovers while they hate it. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. This should have put into a gap.
That'll be never give up.
We'll be here one day longer.
One day longer.
The people's voice is stronger.
The people's voice is stronger.
We're not a cause for our money, we will walk with respect. Keep fighting for these rights for generations that's next. One day longer.
One day longer.
The people's
voice is stronger. Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
also at GamleyLaw.com.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. You know, I look at this, and again, ram through. You want to talk about authoritarian? You want to talk about overreach? You want to talk about steamroller? You know, the big money got the entire Republican Party, except six people who will pay. Those I think it was six Republicans who voted against it in Michigan, the no rights at work agenda, six of them. I'm betting you, I'll bet my bottom dollar, there's big money in their next election on the other side. Guarantee it. Because the wealth class, they don't like disobedience. They don't like people thinking for themselves. They don't like, I don't know, facts. Here's the reality. The reality is what you have seen going on in this country is an assault on working people. And Michigan is a perfect place to look at to show what's going on across the entire country. As union density has gone down, wages have gone with it, and profits have skyrocketed. It's not rocket science. Well, you don't need to be a genius to figure this out. If a worker has less ability to bargain, has less ability to demand higher wages, what's going to happen? They're not going to get them. And Michigan is a perfect example. In 1979, the state of Michigan had a union density of 37%. 37% of the workers in Michigan were members of labor unions. The middle class took 54% of the state's income. That was divvied up amongst the working people, the people who created the wealth. And guess what? They spent it in the local economy, created jobs, all of that stuff. Today, that rate is halved, down to 18%. And guess what? The wages down to 47% of the state's income. So we have seen a theft from the middle class. And I would guarantee when you look at the other numbers downward, the folks below the lower middle class, the folks who are at the bottom of the economic scale, they've gone down as well. Because as the middle loses its bargaining power, guess what happens to people below? They lose theirs. And as they say, it rolls downhill. So this theft in Michigan, this theft in the night, although in broad daylight, because they had the steam. This is why I don't believe in one party rule. This is why I don't believe in absolute power, because it has corrupted. And what they said is, well, you know, we're not, you know, it's not something, it's divisive, he said. It's divisive.
Right to work is an issue that's a very divisive issue. People feel very strongly about it.
That's a divisive issue. People are very strongly about it.
Right to work is an issue that may have its time and place, but I don't believe it's appropriate in Michigan during 2012.
Except on that Thursday when the wealth class said, you will do what you're told or we will spend money against you. This is why we need to get money out of politics. Quick break. Back with hour three. Stick around.
Stand up and show.
Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Michigan is on the path to becoming a right-to-work state after Republicans in the legislature fast-tracked bills on Thursday. Due to a rule that prevents both chambers from voting on the same legislation for 5 days, the soonest the measures can be sent to Governor Rick Snyder's desk is Tuesday. In November, Michiganders rejected a law passed in 2011 that gave emergency financial managers broad powers, which included the power to dissolve union contracts. In an effort to stop the right-to-work legislation from being repealed in a same way, Republicans inserted financial measures into the legislation. Deborah Nault is a registered nurse in Michigan, and she's seen firsthand the difference between having union representation and not.
Well, you know, having worked in the same institution in my career, I worked there in a non-union organization, and then when it became unionized. And there's a huge difference. I mean, we have a voice in the workplace. We have a voice in our staffing. You know, when something isn't right, you know, we can speak up without fear of being reprimanded. And it was not like that before. And so, if, you know, if this, of course, you know, that with right to work, you know, it's going to weaken unions. And, you know, we're not going to have that voice in the workplace, you know, that we enjoy now. And, you know, healthcare, you know, has become very, very complicated, you know, having been in this for over 30 years. It's just not as easy to be a nurse anymore. You know, in the olden days, you know, you didn't need as many nurses because the patients weren't as sick. There wasn't so much technology. There wasn't so much charting. I mean, now all of us are going, you know, to computer documentation and EMRs. I mean, there's just so much that's involved in nursing now that, you know, we just can't do it the way that we did it 15, 20 years ago. And so not to have a voice in what's happening in the workplace, I think is really going to hurt patient safety. You know, it can be costly. You know, but you have to spend the money up front so that you don't, you know, run into problems in the long run. And I don't think that they always see it that way.
Major rallies are expected in downtown Lansing Monday and Tuesday in a last-ditch effort to convince the governor to not sign the bill into law. Snyder had previously said that right to work wasn't on his agenda, but in recent days said he felt the law is actually necessary due to voters voting out his emergency financial manager law.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
So tomorrow there's going to be a big rally in Lansing, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, to protest what this governor there in Michigan has done, this Rick Snyder. And again, you look at this and, well, is that something we're going to pursue? Oh, it's divisive. We don't want to do that. And then all of a sudden, like an ambush, in 8 hours, they ram this thing through. And it's not going to solve the real problems that we have in this country. Look, the Republicans have set up a nice crisis situation. They've set up the hostage scenario. Oh, it's the fiscal cliff. They've set up these diversions to grab our attention away from what's really going on, which is we've got a jobs crisis. We got a problem getting people back to work. And it's because, well, we're pursuing all of this divisive nonsense. We're pursuing, oh, it's 2012, it's the year of the Bible here in Pennsylvania. We're going after abortion, or we're going after gay rights, taking gay rights away from people. And, well, we're screwing workers. And this thing in Michigan, it's just another part of the no rights at work agenda. It's another part of destroying the middle class and turning this entire nation into desperation nation. which is why I've asked Diane Nussbaum. She is a home health care worker in Lansing, Michigan, one of the first home health care workers in Lansing to organize. She's here to talk about what's going on there and how it's going to affect her ability to keep her voice on the job. Diane, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi.
I wanted to get your thoughts first off about what your governor did last Thursday. You know, what your thoughts were on that? Keep it G-rated, please.
I will. I'm really mad about it. I mean, you know, because all he said was that he's not, you know, that's not on his agenda. And just because his proposal didn't go through last month, none of them went through. They all got defeated. We had six of them on our ballot. And one of them was for home care and one was for collective bargaining to protect our working families. And just because, you know, they started off that to amend our state's constitution, I think that was part of the reason why they went down.
Yeah. You know, but I look at this and look, you know, at the end of the day, the work that you do as a home health care worker, taking care of the most vulnerable in our society, is something we should be rewarding and encouraging, and also making sure that you can make a living and support your own family on, instead of figuring out how we can take away from you and make you work longer for less.
Correct. I mean, my job is 24/7. My son is totally handicapped, totally dependent on me to do everything for him. And I have been in front of the sub-Senate and House committees here in Lansing, and my one thing was that my greatest fear, I've had about three of them, and two of them have come true, and the only other thing is if I pass away, what happens to him?
No, heaven forbid.
Right, and the other one was is that you can, you know, if I had to put him in a home, in a nursing home, what would you rather do? Have the, you know, the taxpayer spend $70,000 a year, or pay me the $1,100 a month that you pay me?
Pay the nursing home, the home $70,000 a year, because there's profit to be made there for them.
True.
I mean, the sad reality is this is how some of these people think. Instead of the common sense of keeping your son in the home with someone who loves him, is going to care for them, no, let's figure out where we can cost the taxpayer more so profit can be made.
Right, and, you know, I mean, and I understand that the nursing homes, you know, are understaffed and all that, and, you know, I mean, he has seizures, and they're not going to hear his little ones, and they're only going to come in every 2 hours, maybe, you know, to turn them, you know, from one side to another, but they're not going to hear those little seizures, and they might hear his big ones if they're in the area. And depending on a roommate that he has that, you know, maybe they can't reach for the buzzer to buzz the nurse or that. You know, that's...
So when you talk to these legislators and you talk to these folks who are pushing this agenda, what do they tell you? I mean, can they look you in the face? What do they tell you when they're looking you in the eye?
Not much, because Greg is right next to me. He's sitting in his wheelchair. He goes wherever I go.
So what is their solution? I mean, if not the path that you're on, if not doing what you're doing, what's their solution?
Well, when I went in front of the sub Senate committee, it was to keep it's called Michigan Quality Care Community Council, MQC3 for short, that would have a registry, would train these people that want to become home health care workers, would do background checks, and you're in the safety of your own home. I mean, what more can you want? I mean, you know, would you rather go spend the rest of your life, maybe, you know, a couple years in a nursing home, or would you rather want to stay in your own home and have somebody come in and help you do the little tasks that you can't do, but you're in your own home?
Well, I would,
if your family can't take care, you know, if
right. Well, no, from my perspective, I want to stay home. But from a finance perspective, from a taxpayer perspective, I want people who are going to be in their homes, because I know that's the cheapest way to go about it. That's the most cost-effective way, and personally, the best way to go about it, so that people do have that family environment and around people who care about them. That, to me, is A, the family value position, and B, the fiscal conservative value that the Republicans tell us that they believe in, yet I'm not seeing.
True. I mean, the people in Washington, they don't want to pass these bills and that, you know, so that we're going to go over the fiscal cliff, because they're in that 2%, and they don't want to pay the higher taxes, is my opinion.
Yeah, but what would happen, let's say all the bad stuff, all of the horrible tragedy, and all of the end of the world came like they keep telling us and scaring us and distracting us with. How would cuts to Medicaid, how would it affect you, and how would it affect your son?
Well, he receives Medicaid. He receives SSI. I'm sure they'll be drastically, you know, cut to where, I mean, I just recently moved into this apartment that I live in, and I'll probably have to move out just to, you know, try to make ends meet.
What if they froze the cost of living and changed the cost of living adjustment, which the Republicans keep pushing? Say they want, well, we want to recalculate how it's done, which is basically stealing from your son and the ability and your ability to take care of him. How would that harm you, or what would it do to you? I guess is the question.
It'd probably be horrific. You know, like I said, I'd probably have to move to a cheaper place to where would be maybe a poor part of town, or even back to my parents' house, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes
that's
I just
horrible.
Don't like to think about it.
No, I was just thinking that's a horrible position to have to be in, even to think about it. And I know it's one of those moments where I'm thankful that my children don't have those long-term ailments or handicaps, and I give you just the ultimate credit and you know, praise for being able to deal with it. I feel that I would not do it as well as you.
Oh, I'm sure you can. I mean, I've been told in the past, because when he was in school, he has since graduated, that I couldn't do that. You know, how can you do that? You're going to do it. I mean, you know, it's your own family.
When you're in the
position.
You're
just going to do it. I mean, I could have been like my ex-husband and just left town and, you know, hear from him maybe once a year, if at that most. Or I don't hear from him at all. You know, I mean, he calls whenever, sporadically, maybe. In the last 20 years, I might have heard from him about 3 times.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Let's get back to what's going on. And
sure.
And with this no rights at work agenda that your governor's rammed through, how's this going to affect your position, your ability to have a voice in what you're doing as a home health care worker?
Well, he's already put a bill through, signed a bill saying that us home care workers cannot unionize. Our contract ends in February, and, you know, not only are we trying to save that, but now we have to, you know, this right to work is just, it is just so wrong.
Do you see this as a direct assault on you and your fellow home healthcare workers? Because I got to be honest, from what I've heard him say and what you've pointed out, that it's in February that your contract is up, it seems to me to be this is exactly what he was pushing for, to take your rights, you specifically and folks like you, to take your rights away.
He's a sneaky little SOB, is my opinion. I mean, he's had this on his mind from the very beginning, even though he's been saying, no, that's not on his agenda. You know, so his proposal didn't pass. You know, okay, let's bring it up again maybe next year on, you know, it was the emergency manager,
the little
finance manager.
Right.
And so what if it didn't pass? None of them passed, like I said. Because I was just listening to the news.
No, I mean, generally, what have you... I've seen polling come from Michigan. It says the citizens there, residents like you of the state of Michigan, are totally opposed to this, yet he pushed this through anyway. Have you seen any research, any polling on what the people in your state are saying about this?
Well, I was watching Rachel Maddow's show tonight and Ed Schultz. 6% of Michigan agree with him. You know, but okay, so where's the other 94%?
Well, I'm guessing
that don't agree with him. You know, I mean, we're going to be out there in tens of thousands of people out on our Capitol lawn tomorrow morning.
No, I hope so, and I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to say there. But the 6% that matter to your governor are probably the 6% that pay the bills and give him huge campaign contributions and fund these think tanks and these front groups who have been pushing this. You know, the people that really matter to the Republicans, the very, very extremely wealthy.
The CEOs of, there's a guy, his name is
Dick DeVos.
Right. He's head of Amway. Him and the Koch brothers are, you know, backing this. So, yeah, it's money that's talking.
Yep. That's a sad thing.
They're not even listening to the other side. I mean, they're going to try to put it to where the people can't even vote on it.
And they figured that out. Diane, I appreciate the time. I hope to hear back from you again tomorrow. I hope that you get out and you join the thousands of people in the street there in your capital and fight this back.
We're going to be out there.
Because if you don't do it, if you don't stop it in Michigan, it's going to come here to Pennsylvania. I guarantee it. Diane Nussbaum, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
And the kids locked in the Capitol are fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line.
United we bargain, divided we beg.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you with the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
John Boehner is in a hot huff, fuming so furiously that he'd be red-faced were it not for that eerie orange-toned tan that he constantly has. The Republican House Speaker is angry that President Obama won't play Boehner ball with him in their ongoing altercation over ways to reduce the federal deficit. The GOP leader's pitch to Obama is that the deficit hole should be filled by cutting government spending and eliminating some tax deductions, not, most emphatically not, by increasing taxes on corporations and the rich, even by so little as a dime. But this is an EFAS pitch, a soccer ball. The trick is that Boehner and Company want Democrats and the general public to agree to massive cuts without telling us which programs and deductions they would sacrifice. So far, Obama is refusing to go for this game of Boehner ball, instead standing firm and calmly saying to him, if you want to spare the rich any burden and only cut back on regular folks, don't expect me to do your dirty work for you. Make your pitch and take political responsibility for the pain you would cause. Oh, the huffing and puffing that ensued. We put a serious offer on the table, wailed Boehner to the right-wing friendlies interviewing him on Fox TV. Only, he hadn't. Not one specific cut had been named. So Obama still refused to be suckered into playing Boehner's game. This is Jim Hightower saying, with polls showing rising public scorn for his pitiful performance, Boehner has finally been forced to try another pitch. But even with a do-over, he balked. His latest proposal cuts $1.2 trillion from federal programs and eliminates $800 billion in tax exemptions, but still doesn't tell us which ones. As Casey Stengel asked the players of a terrible ball club he once managed, can't anyone here play this game? Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
And not only are they shutting Detroit down, what they're doing, they're bulldozing it, and they're screwing the workforce there in Michigan. Now, let's see how we can steal a little bit more to make it a little worse. And, you know, I think she pointed out an interesting point. The governor, when they put this stuff to referendum, when they said, hey, let's steal rights away from workers, let's do a lot of this ugliness, let's appoint the little dictators to take over these communities and impose their will, the people said no, overwhelmingly. And now what he's saying is, well, if you didn't do what I want you to, I'm going to impose my will on you. I'm going to ram it down your throat. And there's nothing you can do about it. Because then they tied it to an appropriations bill, which by matter of constitution in Michigan, you then can't put that up for a referendum. Wow. And here you talk to Diane. You know, the Republicans tell us family values, you know, fiscal conservatism. Yeah, I'm buying that. Are you? And I look at what's going on. And I look at someone like Diane that we just talked to. And the policy that we've pursued to help make her life a little bit easier by saying, you know what, we're going to give you a couple hundred, but $1,100 is not a lot of money a month to take care of this person that would cost us tens and $70,000-$80,000 a year to institutionalize. And what kind of quality of life would that be? And in Michigan, I think in talking to her, I think I've come up with it. Right? This is about screwing those home health care workers. This is about destroying those opportunities. And for me, at a time when you're talking about we've got this massive jobs crisis, where we've got millions of people who are unemployed and millions more who are underemployed and millions more who have just dropped completely out of the workforce, you know, there's an excellent opportunity to get people something to do. Taking care of folks in their home, checking in on, because understand, our population is growing older. The demographics are what they are. And we need jobs. We need to get people back to work. Wouldn't it be a good idea to set up a system where, you know what, we're checking on our seniors? So we don't have to be in nursing homes. I guess there's not enough profit in that. But I look at this report by the National Women's Law Center. And they've pointed out that, you know, you look at the cuts that would come about if the Republicans allow us to go over their created cliff. If we cut Medicaid, if we cut those programs that help the poor and help families, according to the National Women's Law Center nationally, Medicare spending supports about 3 million health sector jobs held by women. Nationally, almost 80% of Medicaid-supported jobs held by women. Medicaid creates the most jobs in places like New York, California, and Texas. Even in the smaller states, Medicaid supports thousands of jobs held by women. Wyoming, 4,000 jobs in Wyoming, 7,000 in North Dakota, 7,000 in South Dakota, directly linked to Medicaid spending. So now when you cut that, And this is what I've been talking about for a while. It's this idea of austerity. This idea that, oh, we're going to save money by not spending it. And the Republicans did a great job of this, of talking about this during the election. Well, government spending doesn't create jobs. I'm telling you right now, Medicaid spending creates millions of jobs. But Rick, if we didn't have Medicaid, they would just go to the hospital and there would still be jobs. And the question is, who pays for those? Oh yeah, no one. Or at least they lead us to believe. You know, I've been sitting thinking about this whole diversion. And look, there are some, we've got some problems. Don't get me wrong. There are some things that we need to address. But we can do it as civil, rational adults. Without creating these crises, without creating the cliff or the mirage, whichever. There are common sense things we could do immediately. But again, it comes back down to this game. And I think it was Lindsey Graham who said, you know, we're not going to play that game, Mr. President, because we're going to, how do you say it? He goes, we're going to play that game. Because the president said, we're not going to play a game. And well, Lindsey Graham's going, we're going to play that game because this isn't a game. I'm going, well, what the hell are you talking about? To you, it is a game. But to people like Diane, this is life and death. There is truly a cliff. To working people at the bottom end of the spectrum, there is truly a cliff. To the unemployed who are going to lose their benefits at the end of this month and over the next couple of months, there is truly a cliff. For the millions of people, if we cut Medicaid, who are going to lose their job, and for the millions of people who are not going to be able to get the care they need, there is truly a cliff. All of this other nonsense is just that. And you know one of the things that we haven't heard much talk about? You know, how the corporations in this country have walked away from their responsibility, just completely abdicated their responsibility to the nation. Because we're global corporations now, Rick, don't you know? We're not American companies. And I love what the CEO of Dow Chemical said years ago. He said, well, we'd like to set up little companies in every country so we could just be in that country. You know, I wish we were just on an island by ourselves so we had no allegiance to anyone but ourselves. Me, 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 me. Well, look where we are. The tax receipts that come into the country. In the 1950s, the amount of money that came into our government that was spent on, you know, war and on the industrial war machine and, you know, social programs and what have you. The money that came into our government. 32% of it in the 1950s came from corporations. 32% of it. Last year, it had shrunk to less than 8%. So of the money that we're bringing in, less than 8% of it came from corporations. As where, you know, back in the 50s, 32% of the money that came into our government was from corporate taxes. You stop and you look at the amount of money that the wealth class paid in taxes compared to the middle and lower class. And again, I understand, back in the 50s, The lower part of the economic ladder and the middle class paid higher tax rates. So this nonsense, we're taxed enough, we're just tax, it's nonsense. Because the 1950s and the 1960s had much higher tax rates. It wasn't, and I like what Rachel Tabaknik said earlier in the program, and you might want to go back, go to therickSmithShow.com, get the podcast if you missed her interview. Because, you know, she said, look, and the important part of that is, what happened in Michigan didn't just happen overnight. This wasn't just something where they woke up spur of the moment, oh, this would be a good idea. This has been years, years and years of investment by the very wealthy, years and years of planning and plotting and messaging and funding right-wing shill talk radio programs and funding right-wing authors and newspapers and magazines and you name it, every media outlet possible. The wealth class has been funded because they understand messaging. They understand that constant drumbeat of the message in your ear so that you go, oh, right to work. Oh, we should all have the right to work. And I agree. We should all have the right to a job. We should all have the right to a decent living, decent paycheck to support our family. Fair day's work, fair day's pay. I am right there. I believe we should have an absolute right to those things. But the right to work legislation gives us none of those. There are no rights. There's no work. There's none of that. What there is a right for you to get ripped off. There's a right for you to work for less. There's a right for you to work without benefits. There's a right for you to not to be able to support your family. That's your right, according to them. And it's one that they promote highly. And you look at the reality, you look at the facts. Facts being what they are. Corporate profits, corporate earnings, never higher. Never higher. Union density rates haven't been lower in my lifetime or in the last 50 years. And guess what? That's right. The percentage of wages to GDP, the share that you and I get, well, never lower. And you look at the tax rates. Profit rates through the roof, earnings through the roof, tax rates through the floor. This is what 50 years of investment. This started in the late 50s. This was the conservative movement funded by the wealth class. I mean, you really don't think that these folks, I mean, stop and think about it from purely a business perspective. If you're going to invest in a venture, if you're going to invest some of your hard-earned money, because they keep telling us, you know, these billionaires, they worked hard, they're out there with a pick and a hammer, and, you know, they were swinging away, and their elbows are aching, and their back hurts, and they're sweating, and all of that, which is nonsense, but, you know, it paints a nice picture, that they would invest that money wisely in their own best interest. And I would argue that they have. They've spent billions of dollars fairly wisely. Because the billions that they spent have brought them trillions. They have never been wealthier. And that's because we have continually given back time and time and time again. And you look at the hostess situation. There was a story in Wall Street Journal that said, oh yeah, you know, the money that they were supposed to be paying for pensions, and you know, they just put that in their general operating budget. Yeah, screw those workers. And you go back and you look at all of the money that they took back in concessions from wages and benefits throughout the years. Did that go into new investment into new machinery or any of that, or new equipment, or, you know, or improved products, research development? No. No, not at all. It went to, you know, big bonuses for the wealthy, big bonuses for the CEO. And I look at this and I keep going, you know, the hope is, at some point, we say enough already. At some point, we say, you know, well, why are they spending all of this money? Why are they spending all of this resource? Or they should be creating jobs. Why are they going after taking away the rights of workers? Why are they spending all this money on special interest lobbying? Why are they set up these front groups? And you can go through situation after situation. I mean, like I pointed out, earnings never higher, profits never higher, percentage of wages never lower. They've succeeded in destroying a prosperous working class. And then they throw it out and say, well, you know, Rick, it's because of globalization. We'll never be that country where a high school education guy with you know, who can make a widget, or who can run a press, punch press, or who can run a metal lathe. He's never going to be able to make the living he made back in the 70s. Never. It's just not possible. He's never going to be able to have a pension or health care. It's just not possible because we can't compete with the rest of the world. And my question to that is, why not? Explain that to me, because do we not have control of what happens in our borders in our country? Oh, but it's international competition. Yeah, which we've led the race to the bottom. It's our corporations who have done a good majority of the race to the bottom, the terminal velocity free fall to the bottom. Companies like the Walmarts. Or now you look at Google. Evidently, Google avoided paying $2 billion worth of taxes worldwide because they were able to shift their revenues to Bermuda, one of these tax haven countries. And, you know, the quote that I saw was a guy from I forget what the name of it is. His name was Richard Murphy. He's an accountant and director of the tax research policy place there in Norfolk, England. He said, look, you know, tax strategy of Google and other multinationals is a deep embarrassment to governments around Europe. He said the political awareness now being created in the UK and to a lesser degree elsewhere in Europe is it's us or them. He said people understand that if Google doesn't pay, someone else has to pay or services get cut. And the important part of that is to understand that we in this country are in the exact same position. If the Googles and the GEs and all of the rest of them, if they're walking away from this country, if they're pocketing what 32% back in the 50s, less than 8 today, who's making that up? It's either you and me, or it's people like Diane Nussbaum and her son who get less services and get less help. Doesn't take a genius to figure this out. And you look at what the Republicans are proposing in D.C. right now. Oh, let's push off that Medicare age. Let's just make that goalpost a little bit further out. You know, we'll screw a generation of workers down the road. So you don't have to worry about today. I'm going to screw my children in the process. Good conservative policy. Let's take a quick break. I'm right back after this with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
Monday, December 10th. Mars will reach perihelion, its closest point to the sun, in January 2013.
And true to its history, a major dust storm has shown up in the Martian southern hemisphere. NASA spotted the dust storm on November 10th, and they've been watching it grow. Over the century, astronomers have monitored these storms through telescopes, and now via spacecraft.
Dust storms affected huge areas of Mars in 2001 and 2007, but not since 2007. This is the first time since the Viking missions of the 1970s that scientists have been able to study a regional dust storm both from Mars orbit and with a weather station on the surface. That weather station is on the Mars rover Curiosity, which touched down in August 2012.
NASA says Curiosity's weather station has measured decreased air pressure and a slight rise in overnight low temperature associated with the ongoing dust storm. Another rover on Mars since 2004, called Opportunity, doesn't have a weather station. This rover is more vulnerable to the storm. If the dust storm were to cloud the sky over Opportunity, it might shut the rover down, because Opportunity relies on the sun for its energy.
So NASA scientists are watching, waiting to see if the dust storm will grow or subside. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Mars Dust Storm. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
So last week I'm in D.C. for a couple of days to do my normal knocking on doors, raising money, and you know, getting advertisers to keep the program going. And I'm leaving the city. I'm leaving the place. And understand, I believe Washington, New York, a lot of these really big, heavily crowded cities with lots and lots of traffic are nice places to leave if you can get out. Now, if I lived there, it'd be great because you could just walk around, take public transportation, whatever. But driving, not a good thing. I happened to be there Thursday night when they had this whole big ceremony. They were doing this, who knows, tree lighting, who knows what it was. But they had blocked almost every road, every access out. And it was like an hour and a half just to get out of a very small area. That's why I have to give up driving, especially in D.C. Anyway, I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, on the line. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you very much. Yes, you picked a bad day. The only worst day would be probably January the 21st. I won't recommend driving on January the 21st.
We're not going to drive. We're going to actually take public transportation in, but we are going. I'm going to take two of my kids. They want to go, and because I had taken my older daughter. We had gone to the last inauguration, so we're going to go again this year and take my son because I think it's an experience that every kid should have.
I think it is. I think that's great. So good luck with that. Yeah. I did the last one. I'm not going again.
Well, good for you. But, you know, hey, maybe the next time they'll go, yeah, we've been there, done that enough already. I'll move along. But, yeah, the big trees lighting ceremony. I don't even know. I really don't even know what it was. Was this the big tree lighting ceremony?
Which day was this? Thursday?
I think it was Neil Patrick Harris was there and...
I think it was the tree lighting ceremony that you hit, yes.
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, it was just insane.
Big deal.
It was insane. And, of course, I'm leaving right at rush hour, bumper to bumper everywhere. And then they decide, oh, we're just going to close off this street. You can't go this way.
No.
So then it's like.
You can't get there from here.
Oh, it was just. And everything's one way there, so good luck on that. Enough of my complaining. I understand there was a big Christmas in Washington thing that went on. Had Psy come out and do some singing?
So I came out and did some singing, Gangnam Christmas style.
I hear Psy's got himself a little controversy.
He has got himself a little controversy, but he's apologized. And he has really apologized very graciously. Psy in 2002 did a performance in which he smashed a model of a U.S. Bradley fighting vehicle. Then in 2004 he performed Dear American that included the lyrics, kill those bleeping Yankees who have been torturing Iraqi captives. That's just one line. Each line went on with the similar refrain about killing those bleeping Yankees. Basically, he had reasons for this. South Koreans have become very emotional about the killing of two Korean schoolgirls and about various other things that had happened. But Psy said backstage last night that if the weekend's media frenzy crashed his stardom, he said, I deserve it. He also said, if that's going to hurt my career or not, that's not important. The most important thing is that as a human being, I really fully regret the using of those kinds of words. And he said a lot more than that, and he's clearly genuinely very, very sorry. He said that he's changed and grown a great deal in the last 8 years, and he completely regrets what he did. But he did, he performed open Christmas style and did sort of a little apology on stage, did a weird little dance that was apparently an apology, and everybody had a grand old time. President thanked everybody in his remarks afterwards, did not mention Psy by name. But did shake his hand.
Yeah, well, you know, we're young and we're dumb. We do dumb things. We'll see.
We do, and that's right. That's what we do.
Yeah, my kids love the stupid little song. I am sick of it already.
But it's a funny video. The video makes you smile.
Yeah, it does. Except there are a couple.
917 million people can't be wrong.
Sure they can. but I took my son out to Cleveland for a couple of days. The two of us got away over Thanksgiving, and I had to play that song over and over and over and over the whole way out and back.
You can be wrong.
Oh.
One time's not wrong, is what I'm saying.
Oh, jeez. I just, Dad, play that song again. Oh, God, help me.
How old is the son?
He's six.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he's in that.
That's the dreadful age where you have to watch movies like 1,000 times.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell him that there's an open Christmas style. I'm just not going to do it.
No, don't tell him that.
Not going there, because we're going
but
to...
But it is being broadcast, I think, on the 26th or the 21st. I do think you should watch it. I think that's only fair.
Okay, well, we're going to Florida for Christmas. We're leaving Friday, actually. Going to spend Christmas there at Disney and do all that with the kids. And
they have television there. You can watch it down there.
Oh, well, we don't watch television at home, so that would be kind of difficult. But the whole way down, I know it's going to be, you know, let's hear this dumb song. And then my daughter's got hers, and then my other daughter, she's got, my four-year-old's got hers, and it's just, oh, please help me.
I don't know why you had them, really.
Because I'm easy, and my wife, well, never mind. Her
That's a conversation.
There you go. We're not going there. That'll get me in lots of trouble. Let's talk about something really not all that important then to me. The fiscal cliff coming up, right?
The cliff.
The Grand
running.
Barrage.
Yeah.
Is it over? I mean, are we the end
no.
of the world coming, or is there a deal made?
No, the end of the world isn't until the 21st of December.
Oh, that's right.
As you know.
Yeah.
So we've got a little bit of time. That's the Mayans for you. No, the President Obama and Speaker Boehner met yesterday at the White House, their first one-on-one session regarding talks since, which was a song, since July, no, it was a band.
Yeah,
since
talk
July
was
2011.
A band.
It was a band.
Yes.
And look what happened to them.
Yeah,
so maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that, actually. Following the meeting, the two sides put out identical statements saying that the lines of communication remain open. And what is good about that is that they were identical statements and that subsequent to that, nothing seems to have leaked, which means that you know, they tend to leak things if it's not going well and that they keep their mouths shut if things are going okay and if they're all on the same page. That does seem to be the case.
Okay.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad, well, it depends on what you're looking at this, because I'm seeing that, I'm seeing Obama's going to give in on, they're going to raise the Medicare age, which I just think is a bad idea top to bottom. I think, you know, going after those things in this round is just a bad idea.
You don't, well, unless you've spoken to him, you don't know that that is going to be the compromise. That might be the compromise. There's going to be something in it that Rick doesn't like.
Of course there will be.
But that's called compromise.
I understand that, but it's just not, I understand you compromise on some things, just not the really, really big things.
I understand. And you know, Dick Durbin, I believe it is making the point that between 65 and 67, there's two very important years whereby you may have retired and may not have access to health care, and I think he makes a very valid point.
And my other part of this is the expense. I mean, you know, you don't want to think about 65-year-olds as young, but getting the 65-year-olds into Medicare where you're paying on that, it actually lowers some of the costs for the older people, no? I mean, I don't know.
If that's not necessarily what's going to be the compromise. The compromise could be that it's not 39.6%. Could be that it's 37% that the tax rate is. It could be they change the definition of the wealthy.
Right.
That it's not $250,000. A lot of people, including some Democrats, would like to do that. It could move to $375,000. It could move to $500,000. That's quite a possibility. That's something that could happen.
Yeah, I just don't see the Republicans agreeing to even 37% unless they can hack away at Social Security or Medicare.
They're going to hack away at Medicare. That's going to happen.
Yeah, I just don't see it going any other way. But you know, you're right.
There's going to be hacking.
Yeah. And the sad reality is it's going to be people who are the ones who can least afford it who are going to be the ones getting hacked the most, I believe.
Yeah, some people are going to get hacked.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all of the legislation that I look at. You know, I look at this thing that went on in Michigan last week, this attacking workers and this no rights at work agenda that the Republicans, who, you know, the governor there said, well, it's a divisive issue and we're not going to go after it. You know, just not in our plans for 2012. And yet here they, like thieves in the night, ram this thing through.
Interesting phone call today between top Democrats in the Michigan congressional delegation with Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan, Senator Carl Levin, Democratic Representative Sandy Levin, so that was a little family thing, with Governor Rick Snyder, in which they urged him in no uncertain terms that if you go forward with the right to work legislation, you're going to be basically having years of discord and division, according to Greg Sargent of the Washington Post. Apparently they urged him to consider vetoing the legislation or postponing it until the next session, or even agreeing to subject it to referendum. Now, some Democrats who are on the call say that Snyder told him he would, well, Levin said on a conference call with reporters, the governor listened and he told us he would seriously consider our concerns. Now, also, Sandy Levin, the Democratic rep, told reporters that he pointedly told the governor that moving forward would guarantee, quote, endless controversy and strife. And another congressional Dem on the call added that this will be a hugely contentious issue for many years unless the governor steps back from the brink. And the third said he told the governor that this is one of the most important decisions he'll ever make.
Wow. And I think he's right. I think you want to bring people together. This is the way to do it. And some of the folks that I've talked to, who may have been that moderate Republican, who may have been that person on, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them for, much like when LBJ signed the civil rights stuff, said I'm going to lose the party for 100 years in the South. The Republicans, I think, could lose Michigan in the future.
Yes.
So what's going on in Congress the rest of the week?
Well, the rest of the week, a number of issues are going to be tackled. One thing to look out for, I think, is attacking the issue of the disaster request from Congress on Friday, late on Friday, for Sandy. White House sent Congress a $60.4 billion request for disaster aid, which was less than what states requested. Excuse me. They wanted about $8 billion, but more than what they originally planned to ask for, which was about $50. And the White House doesn't want it to be offset, in other words, by cuts elsewhere. But the tricky thing is that fiscal conservatives want to limit federal spending, and Democratic lawmakers want the money. So some key Republicans are suggesting the aid request should be taken up in phases, with the emergency aid first and longer-term aid later. But regional leaders and Senator Mary Landrieu, who's key on one of the committees involved, and of course is from Louisiana, is saying no, get as much of it now before Congress adjourns. First of all, because there'll be less urgency later,
right,
because everybody forgets. And secondly, because waiting proved a big mistake with Katrina, and because the regional leaders are best positioned to know when the money needs spending.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that really one of the Republicans' key arguments on just about everything, getting it local?
Yes.
Except in this case.
Well, yes. And also we should bear in mind that of the many, many senators involved, not just New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, but you've also got New Hampshire involved. You've got Maryland involved as well, for example. Nearly all of these senators are Democrats, except for Kelly Ayotte.
Interesting. Well, so you're saying this is a this could be a partisan thing then?
Well, I think that could sneak in. I think the hope is everybody's hoping that will not tinge it. But the fact that this is happening at the same time as the fiscal cliff negotiations can't help but impact it to some extent.
Yeah. And lastly, are we going to see any movement on the filibuster? Or is Harry going to use the nuclear option, or are they looking for another way?
Well, they're looking for another way. We won't know until the very beginning of January, because that will be the very first piece of business at the very beginning of January. But there are senators who don't want this to happen. And these are Republican senators because they're in the minority, but they're reaching out to some Democrats because not all Democrats are on board, because there are Democrats who are saying, you know, I don't think we should do this because one day we could be in the minority too, and this is going to come back and bite us. So there's a lot of go slowing happening right now to see if they can get enough votes to stop Harry Reid. And I think it could stop him. I think they could get them, yes.
Yeah, I mean, something's got to change. I mean, you can't continue to have the gridlock, and you can't continue to have the secrecy. And I like my idea. If you want a filibuster, you take it to the floor, and everybody sees who's doing it. Transparency, openness, let's have a little sunshine. None of this secret hold stuff, none of this procedural. Get it on the floor, and if you've got a case to make, make it.
Well, they're thinking that, I mean, there's a possibility that that might go through. The question is, do they want to do it with 51 votes, or do they want to do it with the two-thirds majority? That's the issue.
Yeah. But, you know, I think Lamar Alexander had the best idea. We should just all change our behavior.
Well, why not?
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Yeah.
Victoria, great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after that. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Corporations and billions of welfare, while millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Corporations and billions of welfare, while millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Most have billions in this country and not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you've experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555. Or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Free enterprise has done more to lift people out of poverty, to help build a strong middle class, to help educate our kids, and to make our lives better than all the programs of government combined.
Well, that's exactly what the wealth class in this country, it's exactly what they're saying. I want it all, and I want it now, and we're going to take it. One way or another, we're going to take it. And you look at what went on in Michigan. Look, and the reality is that was years of investment by the wealth class paying, going to pay huge dividends. We'll find out tomorrow. The hope is that some sense gets into the head of this governor there in Michigan. I doubt it. I think it's a done deal, but we will see. And then it's not done until it's done, so we'll see what happens. But I'm assuming, you know, the wealth class, they've got their strengths. They've got their tentacles into these folks, which is why, again, I think we need to go back and examine, A, our tax policy. You know, is it good for democracy to have the handfuls with so much? Is it good to have a handful of really super politically active families who control so much? I mean, you look at the DeVosses and the Kochs. You look at these extraordinarily wealthy people, the Mellon Scaifes, who have been spending untold sums of money that we don't even get to know. Because, of course, it's their money. They can do what they want. Screwing the rest of us. I mean, this has been 30, 40 years, 50 years in the making. This is long-term investment. That doesn't happen on the left. The conservative movement has, they've picked out. Well, they've been picked out by the corporatists, by the very wealthy. And they better do what they're told, or, as we heard earlier, they will be held accountable. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download it at thericksmithshow.com. Also, get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Email me questions, comments, something in your mind, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
It's coming from the wind.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial.